Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage. That's timeforawakening.com, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening, and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. Download TuneIn, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. The home page is there. That should be one of your favorites. If not, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's Time for an Awakening. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we weren't scheduled to have a guest. That was a scheduling mix-up on my part. I'm sorry. Next week, next Sunday, we're scheduled to have Jared Ball join us. This week, we're in open forum, and you're the special guest. So anything that's on your mind, any hot topics, I know a lot of people want to talk about a lot of things centered around these monuments and things of that nature. But if not, anything that's on your mind, give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And again, we're in open forum this evening. No guest scheduled, and you're the special guest, the listening audience. So anything on your mind, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And before we get started with things, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing? How you doing, Brother Ellie?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I have to say again, Elliot, I'm waiting for this eclipse to come through as a symbol of what's going on now when we get down to the political, social, economic, and cultural aspect of things, you know. A dark spot is moving past, and I'm just hoping we all symbolically recognize this just for a moment, but the sun will shine again for African people as it always has.
Yeah, you know, I kind of get the analogy that you just stated, Richard, but and I fully agree. But as far as the natural eclipse, I heard that heard on the television that some reports of people buying bad glasses from some vendors that were selling them out there that was supposed to be, regulated for the eclipse, but they're not. So you're going to have some people with some problems tomorrow.
Say they'll be walking around blind.
Because they said that they've been circulated. Some people have purchased them. So, we'll see what happens tomorrow. I think
that's the basis of capitalism. If you can get away with it,
oh, wow.
They'll buy it. You know, that's why they tell them what's that? Buyers beware.
Wow. Well, we're in open forum this evening, Brother Richard. Before we do that, I did want to read a note from the Freedom and Reconstruction League, which is a black think tank, for no better words to put it in, here in Philadelphia, Pan-African think tank, the Freedom and Reconstruction League. They usually have their meetings at the Joseph Coleman Library on Green Street, right off Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. But I want to read a note that was sent by Brother Rob. It said, we have been informed that the Joseph Coleman Library will be closed for the rest of the month due to necessary repairs on the air conditioning system. The library's personnel promises to contact us when everything is up and running. We're also disappointed about hearing that so many of you had planned to attend. Nevertheless, Brother Akili has promised to deliver his presentation on a future date, and it's signed by Sister Omalar of the Freedom and Reconstruction League. So the meeting on the 26th at the Joseph Coleman Library is canceled. I know that things will probably be up and running for the September meeting because there probably wouldn't be any need for air conditioning at that time necessarily unless you have, you know, a little late summer. But I just want to read that note in reference to the Freedom and Reconstruction League's August 26th meeting at the Joseph Coleman Library.
Yeah, that's good. And Brother Rob and the Freedom and Reconstruction League has been, you know, very beneficial to a lot of us as far as providing information to the community. Just like Friday, Brother Kush was talking about the Communiversity. You know, it's to see that individuals have made, you know, taken, you know, they're taking the responsibility to provide a forum where we can be able to continue to gain information and share. And that's, you know, so critical, especially in this time, to be able to, as you always say, you know, to create these think tanks. And not necessarily they have to have a lot of funding to do it, but as we've always done, done these things out of our passion, our quest for truth, and our understanding of the condition that we're in, we need to constantly disseminate information and feedback and learn from each other.
I agree. It just takes willing people. It doesn't necessarily need that much much money to do it necessarily, unless somebody's you know, using a facility that they might need to compensate the owners. But it just takes willing folks to do it. You know, you mentioned Brother Kush and the group down in the D.C. area, Positive Comedic Visions, has been doing their work for over 25 years. So they're all over. They're all over cities where we are. Sometimes you might have two or three groups dealing with this. We need more. And and you heard Brother Kush said they need more younger people to be involved. So the struggle continues. That's all.
Yes.
I do want to, because we do have a couple calls on the line, I do want to mention, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention, the passing of Baba Dick Gregory on Saturday, according to published reports. I got some information, too, sent to me by Carl Nelson. Baba Dick Gregory was born October 12th, 1932. And passed away on Saturday, which was August 19th, 2017. He was 84 years old. Baba Dick Gregory's work speaks for itself. He was an activist before he was a comedian. He was always out there. It was a part of him. In the 60s, he was active. In the 70s, all the way up until the day of his passing. Anybody that heard him, and he was a regular on the Carl Nelson show, he was sort of a Renaissance man. Dick Gregory knew something about every subject that you could mention and go in depth on it too. And he will be missed.
Yes, he will. He will. You know, one thing I really respect and appreciate, and I wish I could emulate Baba Dick Gregory, it was that he, you know, and you said being a Renaissance man in relationship to the information, because I remember hearing him say how many newspapers he would go through in a day to pull out these different points. But in doing that, how he would connect the dots in order to be able to show that what was said over here, a different thing is said over here, but it relates to it, and it relates to the power relationship between those, especially Black people, who are powerless compared to the power, and how they change. And I think his experience, you know, and his ability to translate that information in a comedic form was really helpful to a lot of us, being able to digest the relationships of things, but it was definitely in showing us how do we go about analyzing, you know, and therefore when we talk about think tank, here's what an individual can do. But I just said, like, because he would say, I mean, how many papers he would get from around the country, And that was what he would do. All, you know, like his morning feed would be going through those papers. And I was like, I know I couldn't do something like that. I never, you know what I mean? Yeah, but I in him showing us, recognizing that's what we would have to do. And that was before even the internet or Google was up and running, mm-hmm. you know, to the general public. So here is not only his ability to be able to inform, but to inform us of a process to keep us up on how do we actually look at things that's in front of us so we won't get duped and confused about issues that are pushed or propagandized compared to what is the structural reality of these things that affect us.
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting Dick Gregory one time at the Power Talk 2 conference in Washington that Carl Nelson puts on each June. Myself and Brother Reg was down there and met Dick Gregory then. I'm glad that Carl in the Power Talk 4, one that just convened in June, gave Baba Gregory the Francis Crest Welsing Award, gave him his flowers, so to speak, while he was here.
Mm-hmm.
According to the published report, he died of heart failure at the in Washington, D.C. hospital after about a week in the hospital. So again, his spirit went home to the ancestors, but his work is still here, and the spirit that he left among some of our people are still here. I know that one of his protégés, so to speak, a younger protégé, Brother Darren Muhammad, kind of takes up the banner, so to speak, and the type of work that Dick was doing, investigating and bringing information. So his spirit is still here. Mm-hmm. It's just his fleshly body has went home, has left us, but his spirit is still here. And again, I just want to make mention of the passing of Dick Gregory, October 12, 1932 to August 19, 2017, 84 years old. There's a couple things out here that we can talk about. We got two callers that called in as soon as the program got started. So let's bring them on board and see what's on their mind. 347, what's your name? Where you calling from? 347?
You hear me?
Yes.
Good evening. My name is Thomas Smith. I'm calling from New York City.
How are you, Thomas?
I'm doing good. I was just looking for some constructive talk, so I saw you, the show was coming on, so I clicked on it. And I was...
Thomas, are you on a speaker?
No, I'm not. I'm on a headpiece.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you a little bit better now. It sounds like you're far away.
I apologize.
Go ahead. Yeah, you sound better now. Good.
Oh, good. I was just, just wanted to join into the conversation, as it picked up. And I definitely feel Dick Gregory's loss. He, did a great job pointing out a lot of issues, especially in the mainstream where a lot of our actors and entertainers, comedians and athletes don't generally come out to say what it is. He did. He was probably punished for it, but I think he had a great career. And the latter years of his life is when I really got exposed to him, coming on different blog, radio shows and things of that nature. And, he'll definitely be missed.
You know, you mentioned something key there, Thomas, that I didn't mention about his activism as being an example. And I don't know whether that banner will be taken up by anybody in entertainment or sports. But, his active example of always putting these issues out there, and even at the expense of his career, so to speak. So, those things, you find once in a while some of the athletes now, they might make a statement on a particular issue. Then after a while it dies down. Or after a while they might think about what they did and consider, well, I'm not going to do this again. But Dick Gregory was always out there on the forefront of several different issues, whether it was the war in Vietnam, injustice always out there about injustice in our communities, police brutality, the police murders of our people. I mean, the issues, he was always out there in the forefront. So that's something to, at least for some of these actors and entertainers in the field that he was in, to at least emulate, even if they don't know about Dick Gregory, they can at least research his work, and maybe the spirit will come upon them to start doing some of these things and taking up that banner.
One thing,
Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Excuse me.
Yeah, I was just going to say absolutely. And from the time, you know, Dick Gregory was 84, when he started this activism was in the 60s, 50s, and 60s, I believe. Mm-hmm. But since then, they've started paying people a lot of money to not do things. I could take LeBron, for instance, when he spoke out about Tamir Rice. And really started making that point, you know, hit home in the mainstream. Nike turned around the next day and gave him a $1 billion contract for 30 years, you know, $30 million for 30 years. And a part of that contract was, you know, he can't speak about social issues. So they've come full circle at paying our stars to be quiet, and that's why I respect Dick Gregory. Sometimes it's best not to take the money. You know, you still have the fame, you still have an audience, but, you know, not taking the money so you can say what you want to say, not be silenced.
You know what? You kind of pulled my coat to something there. Thomas, I didn't know that that was a part of the deal that he signed, promotional contract with Nike, that he couldn't speak out on social issues.
Yeah, they worried that something like, you know, he has to reflect the culture of Nike. And of course, Nike being a public corporation does not take up those issues. So they worried it real slick, but pretty much it silences him. You know, if he does speak out about things to an extent they don't like, then he'll be passing up on, you know, $30 million a year. You know, at least 20 of the years would be when he's not even playing anymore. So, you know, that's a lot of money. So, you know, that's enough to keep some people silent. And I have noticed since then, he hasn't spoken about a lot of things in Cleveland in particular. It's been a hotbed for killings from Tamir Rice to John Crawford, the guy in the Walmart,
mm-hmm.
who shot down to the two people who were in the car. I mean, the cop jumped on the roof, the hood of the car, and let off a clip, unloaded, put a new clip in. I mean, like, these people got shot like 137 times for their car backfiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Cleveland's been a hotbed for racism since he's been back there. And he's been silent ever since. If you notice, ever since he took that $1 billion contract, making him the first $1 billion athlete or whatever they called it, he has been silent.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I would speak thinking about as you were saying, I reflected back to Baba Dick Gregory, and I would recommend everybody who hasn't heard it to listen to the the presentation he did on Frankenstein. I think that, and when you talk about his age and his time, that and his commitment. When you listen to that, the relevancy of what he was addressing then structurally as it deals with the U.S., America, and white supremacy, the system of white supremacy, I think you will see the relevancy of that even now, and him being able to make that piece. So I and when you talk about the brutality that the police had, you know, and that was, and he was speaking at that time when, again, the police were in the 60s making, you know, that kind of presence, which sparked a lot of the rebellions that they're now celebrating in the theater. And I call it celebrating because obviously, you know, if we're not making no historical analysis, then somebody just watching it for entertainment purposes,
mm-hmm.
And they're saying this is what I'm assuming could be seen as this is what we've done then and we can do now because the condition is the same. Blackmail on deployment or whatever. And Dick Gregory, I think, in that piece he developed, Frankenstein, really, for those who haven't, it would be really insightful for us to revisit. Now that he's left us physically to show that the material he produces is still with us.
Thomas, was that all? Do you have any more you want to throw in?
If you can keep my line open, I like to chime in. I don't know how the format of the show works. I generally call it to another show that comes on the Black Talk Network.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different, you know, each show has its own format. But I definitely wanted to speak about Charlottesville, Virginia.
Go ahead.
I definitely see this is on the show that I participate normally in on the Black Talk Network called The Cows. We do a book study session, and we did a book study session on Ben Tillman and the Reconstruction of White Supremacy. And Ben Tillman was the governor of South Carolina. This was during the time of slavery, and then as slavery ended, you saw how he reconstructed the system of racism, white supremacy, to what we would consider to be the Jim Crow South. He pretty much laid out the framework for that. And while we were reading that book, I said, man, Donald Trump, because at the time he was talking about building a wall, and a huge part of Ben Tillman's thing was, you know, these black people now free are going to rape our women. That's what got all the white people in line. Of course, Dr. Weldon, genetic annihilation is always number one on their agenda list. So when he was talking about the Mexicans coming over and raping the women, I put two and two together. Like, man, this is sounding a lot like him. And what the same things that played out in that book as the Republicans were trying to abolish slavery, not because they weren't racist, just that they wanted to inject the system of industrialization as opposed to slave labor with their agreements with the other countries, et cetera. But I'm seeing the same thing playing out today. And also at the same time, like I said, they were going from the slave economy to the Industrial Revolution, the capitalist economy. And we're going into the global economy now from the capitalist economy. And I think white people are trying to get their footing. They want to make sure that they're still number one when it comes down to that. And that's what I'm seeing playing out here. Also, I wanted to say a lot of this is what I would call the Purple Revolution. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that terminology.
No,
Tom.
When you look at the Arab Spring, that was called the Purple Revolution. A lot of people say George Soros is one of the founders of this. But it's using propaganda to cause massive protesting. And I'm seeing that playing out right before our eyes.
Oh, I totally agree with you there. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah. They've been doing this since the Trump was running for the president, and you would see how much funding went into just having thousands of people out to protest and just causing this big uproot. And a lot of that is the same thing that played out that got, you know, a new president. If you look at the Arab Spring, they changed the governments in almost every Arab country. And the governments that they didn't change, they got the countries to change their constitution to fit this global agenda. So since the election with Hillary, and Hillary would always come out wearing purple, and the purple agenda would be being pushed by the liberals. And right afterwards, I saw Van Jones for a whole week come out with a purple tie or a purple shirt. And I was like, man, and as he was, you know, so anti-Trump. And then this week I'm watching him cry on television about the Charlottesville thing. And I'm just like, man, this is looking a lot like this is being staged. This is looking a lot like what they did in in the you know, in the Arabian Peninsula and everywhere, where these protests are being. Who's funding this? You know, where are these people are coming from? It's Fascista group who have nothing to do with black people at all. They're out for gay rights, LGBT, feminists, the Jews. You know, why are they out protesting Confederate? You know, this has nothing to do with your problems here. It's just it's all to me a lot of this is staged, and I would be very to warn black people to stay away from these protests. This isn't our fight. This is them. This is them figuring out how they're going to treat us going forward. Half of them are like, listen, we gotta do something different. The other half is like, listen, we already got our foot on their neck. You know, they can't get a job. We got them in jail. Why are y'all complaining? And this is what is playing out. And it's all about us as black people. General Lee was a Confederate slaveholding. You know, this had nothing to do with gay people. This has nothing to do with white people at all. This is about how they want to treat us going forward.
And if I may, because I think Thomas, you hit on something, and not that I don't disagree in general, and the way I interpret it is, as you said, the battle between industrial and globalists. And I conceptualize it in relationship to energy, the battle between the old energy, oil, and the new energy, which will probably be fusion, which if you look at they're building these, it hasn't come online yet, but they're building these fusion distributing systems, which is, i.e., making suns on the planet. And the reason why energy becomes so important because of where the industrialist economy was that needed oil to fuel it was about manufacturing. The energy economy will be about data, which needs continuous energy because now the new economy will be, and a new currency, the new wealth building, as I see it, is going to be around energy. And therefore, the type of labor that they need will not be the same as they utilized in the industrial, where they had these mass factories and therefore they employ people for mining, for oil rigging, for steel, for steel making towns. I mean, this is the way these manufacturers were making these large sums of money and primarily to support the war effort, the First World War, the Second World War, and Korean War, and then even to the Vietnam War, which at the Korean War, I believe that's when, was it Dwight Eisenhower said that beware of the military industrial complex, because of the sale of armaments. So I do agree totally, and that now, because so many whites are displaced, I was just looking at this article and focusing on New Hampshire, A Tale of Two Americas. New Hampshire, the blue-collar, everyday man from New Hampshire, one of the characteristics speaks of the invisible line. And he's speaking of how you can have all these blue collar workers out of work because there is no work for them. But in a place like New Hampshire, it has the manufacturing industry, but much of the work, that work has decamped to southern states where wages are lower. New Hampshire ranks higher than average in terms of knowledge workers when compared with the United States as a whole. So, and isn't it up in the Northeast where you have all this opiate challenge? So definitely I see that this appropriation of this monument thing is just about trying to curtail those two camps. Now, as they call them, the alt-right and the alt-left. But none of that will change the condition of African people or African-American people, wherever they, however they fall, the chips fall. So I agree wholeheartedly with you.
And Thomas, before I let you go, I do want to mention this, and I totally agree with what you're saying about these things being orchestrated, and our people need to focus in on what we need to do. We can see what's going on here, and this country was founded on murder, slavery, exploitation, genocide, all the evils that you can imagine this country was founded on. So that's what's going to take this place down. We can't be focused in on that. You see it imploding from the inside with whites basically fighting whites over Confederate symbols. Robert E. Lee and statues of Nathan Bedford Forrest and all that. But what about Robert Byrd? It's plenty of those Dixiecrats that were just in the same mindset as Robert E. Lee. They're still honored in the hallowed halls of this government. And they ain't about taking those down or wiping their memory out. We need to focus it on what we need to do politically, socially, economically, and educationally, and not based on a European model. That's the problem now with a lot of the things that we try to do, and especially politically. These people get in there that look like us, and they have a mindset of the Europeans and conduct themselves like Europeans. It's certainly that after the failure of this country, and believe me, all civilizations fail. After the failure of this country, we're going to be here, and we have to govern ourselves, and we can't do it based on the way that we've been under here for the past 400 years. We have blueprints. We have some of our elders that have left blueprints for everything we need politically, socially, educationally, and economically. I think in all these cities where we have established some type of think tanks, we not only need to talk about these issues, but we need to be about changing the mindsets of our people, including our youth. That's why we try to utilize this program to bring guests on that are doing things in their particular cities, not just getting on here fat-mouthing and talking, but doing things. And then the people can join conscious organizations. I'm not talking about joining no NAACP and Urban League, watered-down organizations that's financed by white folks. No, I'm talking about joining conscious grassroots organizations to change our dynamic. It's time for us to do this. It's high time. Thomas, man, I want to thank you for participating and calling, and call again, man.
Oh, absolutely, brother. And if you have more time later, I just wanted to have a little bit of insight on what's to come, the next phase of white supremacy they're ushering in. I've been doing a lot of research on it, and it's pretty astounding. If you have time, I'll mute my line and let me talk.
I'll reach back out to you. Let's go to 215, 215 area code, 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, sir, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hey, Brother Richard, how you doing? Good, brother.
All right, now, how you feel?
I'm doing all right. You know, Brother Elliot, the brother just before me, Brother Thomas, he sounds like a young brother. You know, it just fills my heart as a 56-year-old black man to hear a young brother so insightful like that. You know, he's well-spoken, he's well-learned, he studies and everything like that. It just does my heart warm. You know, when you see some of the ignorance among some of our young brothers out here, when you see a brother like that, in spite of all the stuff you see with the pants hanging off these brothers behind, as Brother Kish described when he was on this past Friday, and to hear a brother like Thomas, it do give you some rare hope. You know what I mean, Elliot and Richard?
Yes.
Yeah. Brother, they're so insightful like that. And before I talk about Baba Dick Gregory, you know, when Brother Thomas was talking about the Cleveland situation, he's right. Cleveland has been a hotbed of injustice, if you will, against our people. He talked about that cracker that stood on top of that car and fired. Remember this devil? And I want the time from the wicked listeners to understand the gist of what Brother Thomas was saying. This no good bastard stood on top of that hood and fired from their estimate, could have been more, but at the very least, he fired 137 shots into that car and killing that sister and brother. And they had committed no crime. Their car accidentally went in reverse. and this cracker just went crazy. He just shot these people unmercifully. And what got me, Brother Elliot and Richard, the devil had the nerve to sit there and say he did it because he was in fear of his life. Well, first of all, Elliot and Richard, common sense tell you, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know, if you was in fear of your life, why would you stand on top of a hood when you're exposed? If somebody had a gun, they could blow your ass away. So they sure they did. The devil is a racist, bigoted, murdering scumbag. No, just like the devil in Chicago, Van Dyke, who shot Laquan McDonald. Same way. None of those cops, when that young man was going through his little mental episode, none of those other cops, he was threatening to kill his stuff because the bull was despondent for whatever reason. None of the cops that drew their weapon. This devil just arrived on the scene. This is how they play with our intelligence, like we stupid people. This cracker arrived on the scene in Chicago. None of the cops that drew their weapons. He gets out of his car and shoots this young man 16 times and I was in fear for my life. You know what I mean? This is the kind of stuff that these crackers do. They kill our people. Fire, I don't know how many rounds, let the brother up in New York, Amadou Diallo, back in 1999, they asked him to reach to show ID like they asked the brother Philando Castile, so you comply with what the cops say, and you still get shot. So he reached in his wallet, brother Amadou Diallo was running a vendor stand at the time, he gets shot 30, 40 times, and the cracker told him, I thought his wallet looked like a gun. I'm saying to myself, and all my layers on this earth, a wallet don't resemble a gun, no shape or form. But a wallet looks like a wallet when it's in the hands of a white man, but that same wallet looks like a gun when it's in the hands of a black man. See what I'm saying? See, this is the kind of sick mindset we're dealing with, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just they always insult us, and it's always that timely refrain, I was in fear of my life. I was in fear of my life. You know, it's always that. You know what I mean? When the cops shot Tamir Rice, the cops just got on the scene. They didn't get a young man a chance to even put down a gun and whatever. First thing, the cops came out the gun firing, and he was in fear of his life. How the hell are you in fear of your life? You just got on the scene. You don't know what the hell is going on. You see a young child out there, and of course, our young children look like grown men to white people, of course. You see this young man with what appears to be a rifle. You come out firing, and you're in fear of your life. You just got on the scene. You know, but yet Tamir Rice looks like the cop said he thought Tamir was a grown man, but yet the white boy over there in the Olympic Games, the cracker, you know, the one that lied, Ryan, whatever his name was, they said he got robbed over there in the Olympic Games. Well, the white media referred to him, Elliot and Richard, as a kid. This man was 34 years old, but they still was calling him a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But Tamir Rice, 12 years old, he looks like a grown man. Same thing with Michael Brown, when the cracker murdered Michael Brown in Cleveland. I mean, in Ferguson. The cops said he looked like a big brute. Now, mind you, now this white cop, Wilson, this cracker, he was a big man himself. He was like 6'4", 220. So he was a pretty big man himself. But he was so afraid of Michael Brown. You know what I mean? He looked like a big brute. That's, you know, I mean, please. I mean, just one insult after another with these devils, man. That's why I say retribution has got to come to these devils. The last thing on it before I talk about Bobby Dick Gregory, even your devil president, the third one, Jefferson, this rapist, murdering pedophile, in one moment of reflection, Elliot and Brother Richard, and to the Time of the Wake and Listen audience, Thomas Jefferson, this rapist pedophile who raped Sally Henning and stuff on numerous occasions, this devil said out of his own mouth before he made transition, he says, I shudder. This is a quote from Jefferson. He said, I shudder for my nation because God's justice cannot be blind forever. He's talking about black people. He said, to know what we have did to these people, he said, if God's justice is equaled out, he said, we stand no chance. So even this devil had a reflection of a moment saying that God's justice can't remain silent forever. So even a no-good cracker like Thomas Jefferson reflected on a supreme being, knowing what's going to happen to these devils. They're going to pay for all the rotten stuff they have done, still doing, and going to probably do in the future. They're going to just what's coming to them. And that's like young Brother Thomas just said, this is not our fight. Like I said, I think Ellie, y'all alluded to it on Friday, and Brother Kush did too. Let white folks fight this out. We should just stand on the sidelines and let them fight it out. Because like I said, the best thing that white folks can do for us, and I said it on y'all show Friday with Brother Kush, don't join our movements. Don't try to direct and tell us what to do. Fight among them other racist white people that you would know, whether like I said, your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your friends. Fight among them. If you really truly care about black folks and you want to see change, fight among them racist devils. Because I don't like Muhammad says, some Caucasians will make it through, because some Caucasians are going to be righteous. They're going to do the right thing. So the best thing you can do as a Caucasian, if you want your reward from the Creator, whether you call him Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, whatever you know you want to call the Creator, you know, African Senate guy, Osiris, whatever you want to call the Supreme Being, white folks will get their reward when they fight against these mother crackers and they deal with them. They'll get their reward from the Creator. But their thing is not to join us, our movements, and not to tell us what to do. Deal with your own devils over there that you have to deal with. And that's how you get your reward as a Caucasian man or woman. But anyway, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Baba Dick Gregory, and I like your synopsis, Elliot, of Dick Gregory and his life and everything with his transition yesterday. I had the honor and privilege of meeting Brother Gregory on many occasions. I don't know. I've seen him so many times coming to Philadelphia. I done lost track. I done shook the man's hand. I done hugged him. I mean, one time he had gave me his phone number years ago. I misplaced it somewhere. I mean, this brother, he was just truly a true Renaissance man. And matter of fact, the last time I saw him, you know, speak was about maybe 2 years ago. Elliot and Richard, he spoke at the Prince Music Theater downtown on 50th and Chestnut. And he was there with Brother Paul Mooney, another conscious black comedian. And Dick, you know, as you know, Dick spoke to a lot of predominantly white audiences. Matter of fact, when I went to see him that night, me and a friend, the audience was pretty much half white that night down in Center City. It was half white, African American, black, and a couple of Latinos or whatever, and maybe a couple of Asian people mixed in between. But Dick Gregory, he would use comedy to, you know, to poke fun at white people's sickness and racism. And I remember that night when we was there a couple of years ago at the Prince Music Theater, me and my friend, we cracked up because with all the white folks, they cracking up Dick's hair out of his own mouth. Brother Baba Gregory said, look, he says, I know a lot of Negroes get tired of us blaming white folk for everything. He said, but I don't. He said, I blame white folk for everything. He said, I blame white for every element in the society. I blame it on white folk. He said, when I get up in the morning and I got pain in my side, it's white folk fault. He said, when I have a headache, I blame it on white folks. He said, when I get up in the morning and I pass gas, it's white folk fault. Dick Gregory said, I blame everything on white folk. And when he said that, Brother Ellen Richard, white folks in the audience just bust out laughing. I mean, this is Dick. This is how the man was. He was real. You know what I mean? And like you said, he could have made so much more money as a comedian if he would have went the way of a clown like Steve Harvey and some other buffoons. If he would have went that way, he would have been probably the first black billionaire comedian. But Dick Gregory, and he was a man that had athletic ability, because Dick Gregory was all state and track and field. That's how he won a scholarship to go to college for his athletic achievements on the track field. But see, Dick Gregory, he put all that aside because he said, look, I got a calling. I know what my reason on this earth is for. It's not just for me to entertain white folks as a comedian or just to run track and field, but I see my people suffering, and I got a calling. He said, Dick Gregory referred to God as the God Force. The God Force gave me a calling, so I just can't just rest on my laurels and make money while my people are here suffering. And this brother was so dynamic. He went up there, he put it on the line. Like you said, he was on the forefront of everything, police brutality, racism, the Vietnam War. You name it, Dick Gregory was there. You know what I mean? He was the first black comedian to sit on the couch on Johnny Carson's show. Dick, and that was one of his requirements. Dick said, look, if I'm coming to your show, you're not going to treat me like you do other black guests. I'm going to sit on that damn couch or I'm not coming to your show. And Johnny Carson acquiesced, and guess what? He was sitting on that couch. You know? I mean, this man was just a giant of a man. He's definitely going to be missed. But like you said earlier, he may be gone physically from us, but his spirit will live forever. You know, because as they say, when you're a strong brother like that, you may leave us physically as a brother or sister, but your spirit lives forever. So the tribute that you said about Dick Gregory, Brother Elliot, Baba Gregory, was so spot on, Brother Elliot. And I appreciate you saying that, man, because he was truly a brother that really loved his people, and he proved it by his everyday life, you know. So, I mean, what a brother, man. What a brother. And last point, Brother Elliot, on Charlottesville and all the other stuff going on, you see clearly, like you said, I let you go on this note so other people can get on. Like you said, the Brother Thomas, white folks imploding from inside. You see this utter chaos, And as I said before, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he predicted this coming. He said, in Fall of America, if you can ever read his book, Fall of America, back in 73, he says there's going to come a time when America is going to be mocked around the world. He said they're going to lose their standing around the world. People are going to lose respect for America. And yet you have never seen so many nations around the world, not just North Korea, but so many other nations around the world stand up to America, because nobody is afraid of America no more. America is destroyed. It's getting destroyed from the inside out. Don't you think Kim Jong-un know that? A lot of other leaders around the world, that's why they're not afraid of America. They see America, how white folks fighting and fighting. They see America imploding from the inside. And this is why America will never be the same. And Trump is the perfect fool to take America down. And in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, it's going to be come a time where they're going to elect politicians. They're going to be a fool. It's going to really make America look bad in front of the whole world. And who has better to represent that image of America being a foolish nation than this idiot that's in the White House now? I mean, it is what is so clear, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, that a blind man can see what's going on. Hey.
Joe, thank you for your call, man.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you, Brother Richard.
All right, now, take care now.
You know, Richard, we... You know, Joe made mention about the world looking at what's going on here in the United States. But if you see all of these countries, European countries, not only the United States, but their brethren in Europe being attacked, whether it's in Spain, France, England, this stuff is not, Europe and their brethren are not dodging into this retribution that's going to come upon them. We just can't be caught up in this foolishness. We can see what's going on. It's all right to comment on it. But we can't throw ourselves wholeheartedly in the stuff that's going on. Because it has nothing to do with us. Nothing to do with us.
I mean, we should be demonstrating that we are, well, we are demonstrating that we are, we have a project of our own. It may not be visible. It may not, everybody may not see the vision everyone may have of what is being built. May not be visible, but since we've been here, and every time we've shown that we're looking at this thing differently, and the way we're looking at it from the point that you're making, that a lot of this don't have nothing to do with us, because we had nothing to do with it, you know, other than under force or under legal bondage actually participating. And those who willingly are participating, they're doing it maybe thinking they're going to get some out. But when I speak, I'm speaking of those of us who recognize that this is not, as everybody's saying, this is not our fight. And we are not going to be distracted by getting involved, you know, in your family feud.
You know, let me read from this published report, because, you know, they're screaming about the Lee statue, and they're going about pulling down other Confederate officers' statues in other southern areas. But I'm talking about the mindset. I ain't necessarily talking about the no uniform that they was wearing. I'm going to read from this published report just a couple of paragraphs. It says, Confederate monuments once again have become the focal point for protests and unrest following a violent white nationalist demonstration in Charlottesville. Most of the controversy has centered around the presence of Confederate monuments in cities and states, such as one of the protesters tore down on Monday night in Durham, North Carolina. But monuments to the Confederacy are well represented at the federal level as well, particularly at the U.S. Capitol. Consider this: in the Capitol's National Sanctuary Hall collection, there are three times as many statues of Confederate soldiers and politicians as there are statues of black people in the entire Capitol complex, according to the records maintained by the architect of the Capitol. The Sanctuary Hall collection comprises 100 statues, two from each state. It was created by an act of Congress in 1864 to allow each state to commemorate deceased persons who have been citizens thereof and have an illustrious historical and renowned history for their distinguished civic or military service. Each individual are memorialized and made by the state legislatures and governors. It took over a century for the states to fully populate the collection of statues. according to the architecture of the architect of the Capitol. 12 of the statues commemorate individuals who either fought for the Confederacy or who were active in Confederate politics, but not a single black American was represented in Sanctuary Hall collection. In recent decades, federal lawmakers sought to address this disconnect, so they added statues to the official sanctuary collection. That power was given to only the states, so Congress commissioned its work for art commemorating African Americans to be placed alongside statues in the Sanctuary Hall. Now, this is in the Capitol in Washington, D.C. The first of the busts was Martin Luther King, added in 1986. Congress didn't create any additional statues of African Americans until the Obama administration, when in 2009 another bust of Sojourner Truth was placed in the Emancipation Hall, and there were full-size statues. There were not two full-size statues again until 2013, when a bronze statue of Frederick Douglass and Rosa Parks were added. So you didn't have blacks added until basically 1986 when they added King, and then 2009 they added three others. But it's a bunch of Confederate politicians and military men all throughout the nation's capital. The building that the Senate meets in, that Cory Booker and what's her name from California?
Kamala Harris.
Yeah, the Richard Brevard Russell Senate building. That guy was a Dixiecrat racist from Georgia. A bigot, if you could point at one. He was the bigot's bigot. Robert Byrd, that one that they commemorate down there in Washington, he was a grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, started some chapters of the Klan. So, you know, don't come with no stuff and pull no wool over black folks' eyes talking about some pull down Robert Lee statue. They'd have to pull down monuments all throughout this country, and white folks are not going to do that.
Well, if they do, the friction, but you see, the issue becomes in the name. This is, you know, using black people again, because all of this on them is in the issue in the name of dealing with black people.
Exactly.
Well, because of slavery. You know, now, it ain't, as somebody said, I mean, of all the issues we got, do we really need to be, you know, worrying about right now the issue of these monuments as memorials or historical memories for white people when we haven't put up any monuments? And I don't know if I'm incorrect in pushing that point. You know, the question is not what these states, what have we put up when we know, as you always say, that our minds have to be reorientated and we need symbols. I remember going to New York, and I think I was in Harlem, and there's two, it surprised me to no end. I think it's Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman on one of the streets, full size. I mean, you don't know how elated I got from seeing that. On the street,
okay,
you know, a statue. Now, I don't know how I got there. Maybe one of the callers can help, you know, inform me and educate us on how it got there. But the importance of every day when people walk that street, they're going to see that, and that's going to represent. They can't miss it. Like, we're talking about these monuments that white folks, obviously, and you said that this is since the 1800s, and that states have been putting new ones in and out, and they still putting in celebrating the Confederacy. So, you know, which means that for them, this is a real thing.
Yeah, oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
And I don't see nobody came to, it's interesting what you said, if I understand it right. The states are able to put two busts up as representation. Now, have we heard of any, I haven't heard in Pennsylvania that we even went to the black community with these politicians that we have to at least, who would we want to put in if we had the opportunity? Just to have the dialogue.
I didn't know.
If we had the choice, I mean, since that's an opportunity,
you know, where is the, I mean, who is the black politician coming to the black folks in Pittsburgh and Chester County and Philadelphia County saying, well, look, you know, we need to consider putting some buses in Congress in one of these halls.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about this until I read this particular article that you had a flurry of them put in during the Obama administration, Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth, and Harriet Tubman. But before that, it was, you know, just a European white man, and several of them was either Confederate generals or Confederate politicians. So, you know, this stuff is, you know, they don't focus in on this stuff about some pulling down Lee's statue in Fredericksburg. This stuff is permeated all through this man's government. Bigot, white, racist are all through this government. In politics and in politics now. It ain't no different. They're just more modernized and they can hide it. They don't like a guy like Trump because this guy's out front with it. He's ignorant. They would rather the uncover type, the good cop, bad cop type of thing. They both cops.
And I have to put in there, Elliot, I'm sorry, because I think I seen the young brother in, in Virginia who was on the council. And if I'm not mistaken, and I'm going off of memory, he was mentioning that and them talking about the removal because they were going to sell the Lee statue, right? And as a means of, as to fund this reparations fund, I think they're calling it. And if I'm not mistaken, this, the amount of money they were talking about getting for the statue, whoever it was going to sell, was $5 million. And Elliot, I mean, when I heard that, I said, $5 million for a reparation? All you want is $5 million? And if I'm not mistaken, that county or that section is 70% African Americans in there, and all you want, and I knew, and they were talking about the conditions of some of the places in that area, and all you need is $5 million, and calling it reparations. It didn't sit well in my mind, and I hope that in the time for waking listening audience that they can be able to correct me if I'm wrong in relationship to what the facts are. But that's what I'm going off of in memory right now. That's what the young brother, and I think he's like 20 something years old, was saying that he was pushing, and he got it passed for them to remove the Lee statue and sell it as a means of funding this fund, which they're calling the reparations fund.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. We got a couple callers on hold, so if you hold till after the break, it'll be excellent. I'll get you right up. Again, open forum. We're in open forum this evening. So, the callers are the special guests, so give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Open forum, time for awakening. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
Of the story of the young eagle. Perhaps you've heard it. There was once a farmer who had a barnyard of leghorn chickens, white leghorn chickens. And one day a friend of his said, you know, you could make some extra money if you would capture an eagle and show him around and charge admission to see him. And so the farmer said, that's a good idea. And he went out and he captured an eagle. But the eagle was too used to freedom. Too used to freedom and would not be tamed. And he would not hold still. And he fought back. And then his friend said, look, maybe we made a little mistake. Why not use the eggs, the two eggs that this female eagle has laid? And so the farmer said, that's good. And he put the two eggs under a setting hen. And in due time, one of the eggs hatched. And this young eagle came out. He didn't know who he was. So the farmer called him Tom. And he put Tom out with the chickens, and he ran around with the chickens, and he thought he was a chicken, never knowing that he was the king of the birds. And he ran around with the chicken. In due time, he became a little ashamed of his color. See, the other chickens were white. And his feathers were deep bronze. So he put some chicken oil on his feathers, kind of lightened them up a bit. And then he noticed that the feathers on his head stood up while the chicken's feathers laid down. And he was a little ashamed of that, so he tied a silk rag around his head. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Well, in due time, the other egg hatched. Now, when this other egg hatched, he broke bad when he came on set. Farmer called him Turk. Now, somehow, Turk felt that he didn't belong down there running away from the farm every time he stamped his foot. And one morning, very early, he wandered over to the edge of the barnyard, young Turk did, and he looked up into the sky, and there he saw a speck appear. And the speck got closer and closer and closer, and it got to be the largest bird he had ever seen. Of course, you and I know that it was a full-grown eagle. And the eagle came to rest on a branch right above the barnyard and looked down at young Turk and said, what are you doing down there with those chickens? And young Turk said, why, Well, I am a chicken. He said, no, you're not a chicken. You're an eagle. He said, an eagle? What's an eagle? He said, an eagle is the king of the skies. He said, I want you to spread your wings and flap them and come up here beside me, and I want to rap to you a while. So young Turk said, I can't fly that high. You know chickens can't fly that high. And he said, why, you can fly that high. There's nothing that you can do, because it's in your blood and in your bone. Spread your wings. He spread his wings. I flapped them, and he flapped them, and he rose higher and higher, higher than he'd ever risen before. And he came in on the branch with the old eagle. Eagle says, now settle down here. He said, I want to tell you that your father was a king of the skies. No bird could fly higher nor farther than he could without rest. And your mother was a queen of the skies. She was looked up to and admired by all of the birds of the sky. That's who you are. He said, well, you know, I'm a little ashamed of the color of my feathers. He said, don't you know what that color represents? He said, well, that's royalty. Represents royalty. He said, well, that makes me feel so good, Turk said. He said, but how about the way the feathers on my head stands up? It's different from the other birds down there, the other chicken. So he said, why, don't you know that's your crown? I said that you were a king. He said, this sounds so good. He said, let's tell Uncle Tom. So he said, Uncle Tom, he called him Uncle Tom in deference to his older years. You know, he was a little older. Uncle Tom, and Uncle Tom was busy running around there with his silk rag on his head and so on. And he said, Uncle Tom, this fellow's telling us who we are. He's giving us our history. Uncle Tom said, I don't want to hear anything about our history. I'm too busy eating this good food down here. Besides, you better come down here. You'll get us all in trouble. He said, I don't want to hear any history. So the old eagle said, just forget him. He's too brainwashed. Let us fly away to our destiny. And they took off.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m. Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for Awakening, and we're in open forum this evening. Anything that's on your mind, give us a holler at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time permitting on the program today, I want to read a letter. Written the minutes of a meeting between our ancestors and representatives of Lincoln at the time, that met with representatives of our ancestors right after the Civil War was over to find out what black folks wanted. It was an interesting letter, minutes of this meeting, that was kept by the United States government. The minutes of this meeting and some of the comments that our ancestors made was very interesting to me. It was shared to me by Brother Richard. Cam Howard, the legislative chair of NCOBRA, referred to the letter when he was on our program about 2 weeks ago. I read that letter and it was very interesting. I'm going to share with you, time permitting, the words of our ancestors towards representatives of this government in 1865, when asked to them direct questions about what black folks wanted. I think you might find it interesting. I certainly did. But let's go back to the phones because we got several callers waiting. Let's go to 646. 646.
What's happening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard?
Hey, sir.
What's going on? Hey, listen, I just got to read something right quick. This is a little message that the brother of that Neanderthal that was killed out there in Virginia wrote. He said, why is it that the death of a white woman at the hands of white supremacist groups has finally gotten the attention of white folks. Question, why have we been turning our heads the other way for so long? Question, how many black families, Latino families, Asian families, Native American families before us have been left broken from the ugly vow of hatred in our country? Question. Too many. And to my non-white brothers and sisters, I am so sorry that many of us wasn't paying attention before Charlottesville. And you know what my reply to him is? The hell with him. And the reason why I say that is because of the simple fact, why must a Neanderthal white woman have to die in order to put forward the human nature, supposedly, of the cracker? Now, as we can see, yesterday in Boston, they say that there was only 6,000 of the wicked and maybe 40,000 of the good. Now, me personally, I put it out there. Black folks ain't had no damn business out there at all, because that's the Neanderthal fight. That ain't our fight, like Malcolm said. Go back to your community, get your community act together, then we can talk. Get them white folks to start behaving like human beings, acting in the right fashion, cutting out, doing what they were doing to our people. Then we could talk. So now here it is, you have supposedly 40,000 of these good old Neanderthal white folks coming up against 6,000 of AKA the so-called devil. Now, that to me only represents 46,000 no good filthy crackers all together just decide who's going to be nice and who's not going to be nice. Now, the point of the matter is that 40,000 going to go back in their community and organize their community to do anything truly to deal with white supremacy in this country? You and I both know ain't a damn thing going to happen. But no, they want to use so-called monuments, statues, and all of that stuff. They want to tear it down. But do anybody ever ask the damn question, what about the books? What are they going to do about the books? That got all of that foolishness in them that our children have to read as part of so-called history? Are they now going to rip up the books too? Or are they going to do their revisionist of history and say that slaves were working? You know what I mean? I mean, it just becomes kind of silly to me to listen to white folks, to witness the nonsense of white folks, and to see us go along with this whole thing, thinking that those 40,000 are supposedly allies of ours, and that 40,000 is going to do any damn thing to change our position in this country. When are we going to wake up and see this, and see and smell the coffee that those white folks are trying to protect their little bit of white privilege that they have? Because the thing is this. See, the 6,000 is heavily armed. And I don't think they really have no issue in dying if the cause is right. Now, will they attack the 40,000 at some point in time? Hey, listen, I tell you this much. You start taking away all of their statues, they're going to have to blame someone. And if you notice, most of these other nationalities are leaving this country as quiet as cat. You ain't got as many Bubba Louis in this country as you did a year ago. So the focus will become on us and then those white sympathizers. Now, me and you both know that we usually don't mingle too tough around the Neanderthal. So more likely, the person that's going to be attacked is the Neanderthal. Now, some of us who run to their aid, like the dumbasses that we are, may get caught up in the crossfire, but the chances are we'll be in our community if we got any sense, and then knowing that we don't have any communities, maybe we'll decide to stay home instead of going out in the street to see a block party. But I believe, and I'm hoping, that they kill each other. I could care less. Because you cannot, in all honesty, go about the business at hand and reconstruct history in dealing with white supremacy. It just doesn't happen. Because you got to be a bad hombre, as they say, to just decide that the one with the gun, you're going to take the gun from him, and in the process, you're going to do it with peace and harmony and protest and march it. That's why I think he's a fool if you ever march for anything. So by now, we're in a position to where, as the wingnuts, feel like their back is against the wall, because they now have to protect their last stand. Now you got this sick cracker Bannon out of the White House, so you really don't know what's going to happen with white-on-white crime now, because you don't know what gender he's going to move forward with. And Trump done already let you know, I'm a sympathizer of the alt-right. I don't care about the left, because this whole thing is, well, y'all both bad guys. You know, you're not innocent because you're on the left. But that's the narrative that they put forward. You know?
And Jay, if I may, because something you said about the books that, and I remember hearing you say before about being in the study groups in the 90s. Remember when we were bringing up that the Egyptians were black? And we wanted to incorporate that in the educational system. Asa Hilliard did a Portland piece. And remember, Sessions came out with the Disuniting of America, just because we wanted to say that, correct the historical narrative so that our children would be able to get a true reflection. You remember all the storm that came out of that?
Yeah, yeah. But you know, also, Melissa Asante had done some stuff on it. And at one time, ASCAP had put together a whole program in dealing and addressing that. And that was never really dealt with. So that's why I'm saying, man, we're in a situation to where we're trying to really change history. But we're not trying to change it to put the African truth on it. We're just trying to change it to appease BS. So, I mean, it's like you could take a picture down, but if the information is still in the book, eventually at some point in time, somebody gonna read the damn book. But then again, in this country, that may not be the case, because you got a whole bunch of stupid people today. But who knows? Maybe somebody may put it in the video game. Or a YouTube video or something like that, and then, you know, they would see it. But, you know, the reality in all of this is that, to me, it ain't black folks' fight. I don't care about this nonsense about the Confederacy and all of that. If it's all gone, is white supremacy going to stop tomorrow? Is the minds of these wingnuts going to change? Is good old white people going to now decide they want to change the dynamics of the country and do what's right by the people? No, they're not going to do none of those things. They're going to continue their agenda to solidify their position in this country. And unfortunately, we as a people don't understand it. How you want to be an ally with your oppressor? When the hell have you ever won when you are ally of the oppressor? When the oppressor ever unite with you when he wants to place you back into your enslavement? Because he's going to do what? Be the dominant force. But we don't get that. But listen, I also like to say this. Robert Dick Gregory was one of the funniest men in the whole wide world. Bubba, you know, dropped a lot of information, and Bubba dropped a lot of foolishness also. But the man had one of the most beautiful hearts in the world. He loved our people. He wanted to see our people do better. And he's going to be sorely missed. And could I say this? I'm going to honestly say, when I heard that he died yesterday, I was just shocked because I thought Dick would live to be 100. You know, but Dick was the type of person that you thought he took so good care of himself that he wasn't going to die no time soon. But I think what his mistake was, he went into the hospital and they got his ass.
Oh, God. You can't overlook it.
Just like Dr. Sabi. Dr. Sabi got caught up in a situation where he was vulnerable to not be able to do his routine. But, you know, in all seriousness, Dick was a beautiful man. He did a lot for his people. And the thing that I most admired about him was he had 11 children with one African woman. And he never decided to be like that piece of garbage, Harry Belafonte or Sidney Poitier, and go out there and get him a filthy, stinking Becky. He decided he really wanted to be an African, and he wanted an African woman by his side. And let me tell you something. Lil was his right and his left hand, from what I understand. She was the person you had to talk to before you could talk to Dick. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, the bottom line is, it's a beautiful thing when you see an African man and an African woman together. They're a shining example. Because just like everybody talks junk about Bill Cosby, you know Sister Camille ain't leave that brother. She's still there with him. And you got to admire a woman that stays with a man that is being viciously attacked by the overseer and the daddy. You know what I mean? That shows a lot about who and what she is and who and what they are. Because deep down inside, she know he's guilty. But she's at least smart enough to hold on to her position and not allow that to break apart something, you know what I mean, that was built on whatever it was built on. And they stay, and they've been together for over 50 years. You don't even see these Negroes today staying with a woman for that period of time. Somebody get together today and marry a woman, the chances of them sticking together for 50 years, I could take odds on it, and I was always going on the side that it would be a beautiful thing if it lasted 10 years. Anything over 10 years, you bless. But that's just the reality of what the society has created. So you're not going to see longevity of 40 and 50 and 60 years of, you know, the black family staying together. And believe me, a lot of those relationships, Papa was going out there doing this thing. But Mama knew Papa was just doing this thing, but he was taking care of home. And not an experience in my family. So, you know, all I'm saying is, let's keep in context that these white folks are not our friends, that all they're trying to do is place themselves in a position to survive and to dominate us. And they're never going to place themselves in a position to where they're not going to be able to dominate us. And the sad thing is that we're in the position that we're just trying to integrate ourselves more and more every day into this beast house. That's like, it's madness. You know what I mean? We got to have a coalition. We got to have this. We got to have this. Why can't you never say, I want to separate from this beast and have my own thing and build my own community, build my own neighborhood? In one of the last videos that I saw of Dick, he was talking about how we need to build our own community so that we can be able to share the wealth amongst one another like other communities do. You know what I mean? That Jew money don't run out the hands of a Jew or don't go go through their hands numerous of times before it go to the other white man? That's just not going to happen. Because you know he ain't going to give us nothing. You know? He really not going to give us nothing. Or he'll do like they do my brother-in-law, who's his attorney. They'll just feed him because he's doing the service for him. You know what I mean?
Now you put your brother-in-law out there. Thank you for your call, Jay. You didn't expose your brother-in-law now. You're talking about it.
No, I'm not exposing him. I'm just saying, the dude that went out there and found him a black man that he's willing to do business with. But remember, the brother-in-law is in a community or a neighborhood or whatever where there ain't that many, you know what I'm saying, black attorneys that can do what he do. So he's up there in that area to where they come through. And, you know, he's one of those good Negroes. He's not a Negro that's threatening stuff. He's just going to do his job, you know, basically keep his mouth shut and go on. And I don't have no issue with it. You know what I'm saying? I don't have no problem with it. I mean, you know, in all honesty, the Negro needs to behave like that when they get in certain positions. But the one thing you must do is you must observe that Jew, look at his practices, and get the good from what that Jew will expose you to, and then put it into your community. Now, does he do that? I don't know, because we don't rap like that, because he's in that BS fraternity nonsense. And, you know, I don't mess with nobody who supports something of Greek nonsense where it was us Africans who taught them Greeks, and now the Greek want to take what we taught them and give it back to you in some sort of victorial bullshit. That just shows the sickness of the Negro, because you know, and I both know,
bring it home, Jay,
that them fraternities will do more for one another than they will for the African. You know, they don't believe in no African nationalism. They believe in fraternity, sororities, and greatness. So how could you be of really value as an African when you repping the Greek? Could you explain that to me?
No.
Okay, so what value are you really of? How could the Greek be your system of brotherhood separated from your system of Africanness? That's the craziest thing in the world with me. But I mean, hey, listen. If you think about it,
Jay,
in this country,
Jay,
Elliot and Richard, they got more fraternities and sorority brothers and sisters that practice that BS than they do who practice nationalism and Pan-Africanism. Now, what did that tell you?
Jay, thank you for your call, man.
Okay, brother. Have a good day.
Peace. You know, Jay, and all the things that he mentioned, he did raise a point about our people, because I remember when they had that ceremony in that church down in Charlottesville, and you had, I don't know whether it was a black church, but you had a lot of our people there shedding tears and crying. But it's kind of ironic, Richard, that about a month ago, and see, we got to put better protection on our young people and youth, and some parents are under the illusion of inclusion here in this country. You know, the young man that went over there to Greece, and I think he was on break from, well, he was on break from college.
Oh, yeah.
Went over there with some other young white folks over there in Greece and got murdered in a tavern. And they had it on camera because they chased him out of the bar and basically beat him to death on the street, and the cameras caught it. Now, you didn't hear any more about that case. You didn't hear the United States demanding that these white folks that beat him over there in Greece be brought to justice. It basically died. And you didn't hear our people talking about it. Not even these politicians that's supposed to represent black folks. They should be demanding justice for that young man's family. But soon as some old white person, or whoever it is, lose their life, you got blacks just crying and on their Facebook pages, pray for Spain, pray for France, all that other stuff. We got to put a little bit more, better protection on our youth. And you know, they socializing with these white folks in areas where they don't, you know, they might not be aware of other people being around them, people knowing where they are, at least people that look like them being in close proximity or somewhere where they can get some type of help if something happens. Yeah, I just thought about that because, you know, you're in this church crying for these other folks. You got a young man that was murdered over there in Greece by some other white folks that think the same way as the ones here.
It's a global thing.
Let's grab another call here. Let's go to, look like a call from Georgia. Carla, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello, good evening. This is Kia. I'm calling from Georgia. How are you?
How are you, Kia?
I'm fine. Hey, it's a good show as always. I guess a lot of stuff to talk about. But the statues, of course, they need, I don't know, honestly, I don't know if they need to be moved, don't need to be moved. But I know here in Macon, they just had an article about it, and there was one black mayor before I moved here, and he proposed moving one of the statues, like it's time to go. But the new mayor, who is white, was like, at that time, according to the article, said the monuments were built to honor courage and loyalty and were not in the same category as the other symbols that have been appropriated by hate groups. So that's what he told the news reporter. And then in the article, there's some black Congress lady, well, commissioner lady, and said, instead of focusing on taking down monuments, the commissioner lady, well, her name is Elaine Lewis, I don't know her, Commissioner Elaine Lewis believes the most important thing to do now is to move forward. And I just don't understand why they are just like on the side of these people. And also, last week, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, Mr. Reed, he was talking about using the 14th Amendment to move some things along. And I went to read it, and part of it says, after the voting and citizen stuff, that basically if you support the enemy, you can't run for office. So to me, if all these statues are in these places, to me, that's a sign that they're supporting the enemy and they should not be in office. I don't know if any legal person has looked into that, because if that's true, then everybody has to go all at one time and start all over with a bunch of new people.
Mm.
It's the 14th Amendment, Section 3.
Yeah, read it for our listening audience here.
Okay, it says, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, that's a lot of people, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. And then here's the kicker, because there's always a kicker. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. So I don't know if they removed this disability, but if not, I mean, if you have these monuments, oh, this is wonderful, all this history, you know, the Confederate flag should be posted high and wide in the Capitol for the world to see, blah, blah, blah. Sounds like you're supporting the enemy. And that, for what they tell us, they lost.
Well,
if they lost and they're the enemy, they still should have to go. I don't see no remnants from Spain from the Spanish-American War. I don't see no remnants from Britain from the war of 1812. I don't see those.
Well, you know, Kia, and I know that you understand, you know, when you read that 14th Amendment, which I've read it. In fact, we talked about it on this program. It's a little different when the enemy, a so-called enemy, is your brother. So you got white folks that the quote-unquote enemy is their own brother. So,
I understand that, mm-hmm. But if they were doing what they're supposed to do, even that guy who got shot at the baseball game, whatever, he definitely should have been in. Steve Scalise or whatever from Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
He should have never been in, because he's like, oh, you have the KKK and this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. I thought we were supposed to be against that. I thought that was a hate group against Americans.
But whatever. But it just goes to show we need to read more and know more. And I know someone, the previous caller was talking about how we need to start our own businesses and all that. And all of that is wonderful, and I'm not knocking that. But that takes time. That's hard work. And I'm not saying don't do it. But I'm just kind of tired. It sounds like black people are always beating down other black people because they haven't done something fast enough. They beat down, in fact, I was talking to this young lady. She was from Africa. And she talked about Africa, Zimbabwe, the countries, blah, blah, blah. I said, they only been a country 50 years.
Mm.
I said, even in America, they had a civil war after 75. How come we got to hurry and do things correctly and white people have all the time in the world? She was like, oh, yeah, you got a point. Yeah, the countries are new. I know it feels like they're going too slow or whatever because of technology and you see everything happen faster, but where all the other countries get hundreds of years to get their stuff together, you just told them 50 years, taking all the resources, oh, get it together. I'm just getting tired of black people picking on black people all the time.
Good point.
Yeah. Thank you for your call.
Uh-huh.
Let's go to 719. 719. 719.
How you doing, brother? Can you hear me, Elliot?
Oh, I hear you now.
Okay. How you doing, Brother Elliot? How you doing, Richard?
How are you, sir?
All right. Good evening, sirs. Good open forum. I like what y'all doing. I first want to start out just by saying, you know, thank you for the show. Time for Awakening. Very true statement. And I also want to say, Thomas, you know, I listen to him on the cows myself.
Okay.
The guy's always, he's always giving up some type of perspective that's amazing, you know, that probably other people wouldn't see right away. I do appreciate, the Black Talk Network and Time for Awakening. I do want to point out, at least try to give some accolades to Scotty and Max Farkas for pulling off the march on Washington, against 21st century slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for everything that's being talked on here today, I think we should show them guys some love. I appreciate Dick Gregory. I probably learned about him about 15 years ago. He put me on to the knowledge of the chemtrails. Not that I didn't know who he was. I'm just saying to understand his work as an activist beyond the stage of comedy.
Okay.
He really put me onto the knowledge of the chemtrail, you know, conversation that was going on. He pointed out a lot of things that a decade later came to seem very true, as I think is going on right now. So I think Dick Gregory, an ancestor now, and I don't know if I gave him his flowers, so I hope this is a good opportunity to do it now, to hold him up and keep him there in our memory and our spirits. I want to go in on that conversation about the Charlottesville the protest. I think it'd be kind of, you know, rhetorical to just be asking people, you know, is this on this audience anyway? I think it'd be condescending to say, you know, what are white folks doing to us, for us to be out here, you know, protesting and all this and that we should be out there right along with them. My wife and I are having that conversation every night about, you know, the setup is what everybody in this audience understands it to be. One thing, though, I would ask us to look at real carefully with that whole process, and I think we need to start really adapting and promoting a military-minded type of concept of approaching these things, because it's a lot of coddling in our community, you know, that we're not, it's confusing us, or at least in my opinion, it keeps us from being, you know, just developing the courage to stand up to what we can clearly see is wrong. Nobody has to tell us that. What I see out of Charlottesville, if everybody in this audience is familiar with the bell curve, then you're probably familiar with Charles Murray, the author of it. He pointed out that white folk, himself as a conservative, pretty far right, he pointed out that the average white person that we see out there protesting today is your Xbox playing white male who is not angry about anything that we can't even point out ourselves that's happening in the protest. Not one agenda has been pointed out by why they fighting other than statues. You got, I mean, for real, man, people losing their jobs. There's a lot of jobs that they can't even fill because the skill trades is not are not available.
Okay.
As a remodeler myself, I can testify to that. I can't find skilled people very often. You know, we have to really go through a lot of green thumbs before we can find somebody that might be able to keep along. So it's a bigger problem going on that we ain't even seeing being addressed at the so-called protests for fairness. We got white people running around here with Black Lives Matter posters and shirts on. There ain't no black people in the crowd. We don't hear nothing about black agendas. So I think, you know, we waste our time kind of, you know, just giving them the energy for that. I think what I see is what Charles Murray was saying. I mean, the man clearly lets it be known that, you know, he's for white people, you know, or whatever that means. I mean, but he pointed out some very clear things that I think everybody should go look at least once and see what you think about it. He said, you know, these are Xbox, you know, fantasy-driven white men running around here because they're not worried about work. We saw a setup when Donald Trump said he would save so many jobs over at Carrier. That didn't really happen. And the people that were supposed to be against him, all those so-called supporters, after a while, they just kind of fizzled away. We ain't heard nothing about that. These people are not suffering from money. Mm-hmm. What I see out there on that stage is they're suffering from the concept that if we're going to deal with these people in our presence, one is saying we just want to put his ass in chains and get the whipping backs. The other is saying, no, man, look, we got to be cool. Take down the picture of, you know, General Lee. And, you know, just invite them in and we'll serve them poison porridge.
Mm.
You know, we're not catching that type of message. That's a military strategy. You get as close to your enemy as you possibly can. Thanksgiving is a story if people even see it as anything bad. I mean, of real, I would look at the story how I do is, well, so basically you came over and kicked it with me. We went to sleep and you start stabbing us to death. I don't get this, how we're celebrating this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as Charles Murray pointed out, these people ain't out there fighting over getting housing rights, jobs. This is a white man who supports the whole alt-right movement. That is not what they're out there fighting about. But we're going. I guarantee y'all here in the next few years, the protest that is going to change the narrative. You're going to see our groups out there protesting about no jobs, no money, no access to it whatsoever.
Well, it'll become a national security problem because then you'd be considered terrorist because of the language that's being put in place now that what you protest can be considered your language can be considered terrorist, not your act, but what you say.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, we are at a point now where we're scared to even speak up, even speak a language that sounds like we're practicing or promoting Second Amendment rights.
Hmm.
You know, that's pretty powerful. We got to start looking at that and understanding the conversation, and it really needs to, and as y'all have been saying on here, we got to figure out how to get out of the conversations, lengthy conversations, and get into some, you know, some real productive activity. And that's really hard because, you know, even in families, I mean, there's a lot of families, mine being one of them, where family members don't understand what we're saying and they perceive us as racist. And we're like, hold up, how can I be anything like that, you know, for pointing out what you see clearly on, you know, real live screen. You don't even got to go to a television no more to see the activity going on. One thing why I say we need to be able to start embracing and encouraging ourselves to take on some more military-minded movements is because when I thought about this whole propaganda about the opioid epidemic that's going on, what came to my mind is we should blame Eminem, a.k.a. Marshall Mathers. Why? Because he promoted Adderall, OxyContin, yellow and blue pills. I mean, this guy was, you know, that was their mantra, the trailer park trash, the TPT thing.
see that they're pushing lawsuits against them. It's not even class action. They're saying that it's making it in the same context as they went after the tobacco industry. So these people who have been addicted by that, as you said, they're finding a specific person to hold accountable and want redress, financial
and
redress.
And they did it in the 90s with Tupac Shakur. That's the reason why I said it. We got to understand one thing. We might have to start throwing back some mud.
It's time for it, brother.
And us as the people, we're very moral structured, but I don't know how much of that is our natural existence versus how much of that has been indoctrinated into us. Because you got to be able to say a sane person can't live too long functioning normally under the conditions we've been living under without eventually striking out.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%.
So our narrative really has to contain. I mean, I'm not encouraging this station or anybody else to do it, but I'm saying, hey, if Tupac can get the criticism for creating thugs out of young black men, then Marshall Mathers should get the same consequence for creating white trash. Out here on the street. We're not even talking about stuff like, I mean, for example, and I'm going to cut it short, but right here in Colorado Springs, in this location, they have found 5 explosives, particularly in black neighborhoods. This ain't even getting on worldwide news. I mean, this ain't even getting national news.
Well, listen, I think that you know why a segment of our people, and I won't say a lot, because I think a lot of our people suffer from lack of information. And if I use the term ignorant, I'm not saying it because our people are stupid. I'm saying it because we don't have the information. But a lot of the reason why our people don't adopt a military stance, and I'll use your words, a military posture. You tell me why, brother, in your mind.
Well, in my mind, I see it for what it was. You know, me myself having—I haven't had a history with the military, but I tried.
No. It's a short answer. Tell me why, in your mind, a lot of our people haven't adopted a military posture or stance towards our situation here.
In my opinion, it's just easy not to fight.
It's what?
It's just easier not to fight.
Well, let me help you a little bit with that. I know that religion has a lot to do with why an overwhelming majority of our people don't adopt a military stance or posture towards our situation here. It has almost 100% of what to do with it. Because when you're taught, especially when our four parents on these plantations were taught to turn the other cheek, obey those that are in authority over you, obey those that have rule over you, that obey your masters. That stuff is ingrained in a lot of our people. And they don't want to do anything against this man or speak against him. That's another thing. They don't want to speak against him. They'll speak against you. You do something, they'll hold it over your head. They ain't too fast to forgive you. But they're quick to forgive Europeans no matter what they do. You had an example of it in North Carolina, in Charleston, North Carolina, when that monster went in there and shot innocent people that was in there praying in church. Young people, older people. And the people jumped out before this clown was even arrested. Well, he was just arrested good. He wasn't even hardly booked, and they was ready to forgive him. And stuff like that happens a lot. And it comes from the Eurocentric teaching of so-called Bible scriptures. That's where it comes from, man. Some of our people might not adopt a military posture, but then you'll have some that will. You had men in our history that adopted a military posture against this man and was turned in before they could even get started. Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, and both of those men were ministers. They were pastors. Well, we use that term pastors now, but they were ministers. They were a different type of minister, and you don't even see churches now hold those men in reverence. Isn't that a little strange?
Yes, it is.
As much praying and all as we do in these places on Sundays and Saturdays, those two men were ministers and gave their lives for black people. You don't hear their names reverenced. It should be a statue of Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey in every black church in this country. Do you agree, Richard?
Yeah, yeah. At least in the area that they were in.
Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, I'm going to get off, but before I get off, I was just going to say this, you know, everything you described, and that, like you said, as an answer, yeah, that is a very obvious answer.
And listen, I'm not saying, believe me, and for our listeners, I'm not trying to be offensive. I just want our people to understand and deal with the reality of it. That's the reality of it.
And if we start to use the words, and this is one thing I love about Gusty over there at the Cows. He's adamant about we got to learn to start accepting the accuracy of words and what they mean. If somebody, like you said, if you say ignorant, that is not even a disrespectful word. It just simply says, man, you know the facts, but you choose to ignore them. And a lot of us just don't know. We don't know the words that we're hearing. They've been told to us what they mean. We don't even know what they mean. And we'll use these things and talking points and everything we do, and we get offended by someone that comes along and says something that makes some sense. But what we don't try to do, I realize, even in every narrative, I only hear it very so often, but these are acts of terrorism. And the quicker people start accepting them, for what it really describes, it's, you will become more comfortable and prepared to deal with what's in front of you. That's what I mean by a militant mind.
Listen,
we don't even know what's in front of us.
It's unnatural for anybody, any human being, to be attacked and not fight back. That's totally unnatural. But it's been ingrained in a segment of our people that is the process that you're supposed to take. Listen, if they did any studying, even the man that they say that this is attributed to, Christ, he didn't even do that. He lost his life because he went in a church and started a ruckus in there, and somebody lost their life in there because according to the text, when they hung this guy Barabbas, they said that he was with Jesus in the insurrection. So it was fighting in there, and somebody lost their life because they called Barabbas a murderer. So he didn't go in there with no, I'm turning my cheek, or passive. He went in there, and they was fighting in that place. I think the text said that he took some straps or something and beat some of them people out of the place. So he wasn't no mealy mouth and turn the other cheek and no pussyfooter. They need to, if they're going to believe these texts, they need to get into them. And start throwing out what has been placed in there and start adhering to things that are sound knowledge. It's totally unnatural for a people that's being attacked constantly to not fight back. Totally unnatural. Brother, thank you for your participation, man, and call again. Richard?
Yes.
Let's go to, we got a brother on the line I ain't heard from in a while. Let's go to 773.
You got me, brother?
Where you been at? That's the thing. Richard's been asking where you been at. We've had brothers on here that's from your city. Fred Hampton Jr.
I've been all over, brother.
And we was looking for you, and you wasn't around. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I call you, but you don't have time to get me on. For instance, I called when you had Reverend Coyne on, but he had left. And I noticed Reverend Corn was a follower and admired the great Marcus Garvey. And I was trying to call to ask Reverend Corn, what do he think about Garvey's prediction coming up on 100 years that if we did not go back as a people and reclaim Africa for us and the Africans, Garvey said in 1920, if we did not do that, they was going to do away with us here, and then they was going to do away with the Africans. And it is going down, brother, exactly as Garvey said. You know, Mr. Hitler said many, many moons ago, Mr. Hitler told the German people, have no pity. Act brutally. That's what Hitler told them. That's what we are seeing today. Most of us listen know America is a white supremacy country. But some of us are still looking for some ray of hope in a white supremacy country. I don't know why, but I guess there's something they see. But it's not going to happen. Listen to me very carefully. Our time is quickly running out. The process of understanding or perceiving a coming evil has put many people into a situation of the utmost danger. That is exactly where we find ourselves today as a people. Most of the people who was exterminated in the past, listen, most of the people who was exterminated in the past, they never saw extermination coming. They saw things being done to them. They saw people being rude, treating them bad. They had no idea that the people that was doing this to them had plans to exterminate them. This is where we are right now. And for black people who out there talking about, oh, somebody need to stand up to Donald Hitler. Oh, why he's doing this? Why the people ain't talking up? This is a white supremacy country. Hitler did not overthrow the government in Germany. Donald Hitler Mussolini dump did not overthrow the power structure in this country. Hear me good. The power structure in this country put this psychopath in office to do exactly what he's doing, to create the environment that we are seeing. They need this environment that we are seeing for us to be exterminated. Now, violence rule, whether people like that or not, violence and force rule the world. The Caucasian who don't agree with these psychopaths, can they outgun them? Can they outkill them? Do they have the government on their side? FBI, CIA, do they police? Do they have them on their side? No, the good white protesters don't have them. So you're going to lose. I advise anybody, it ain't easy. If you have the wherewithal, if you're able to get some young child or grandchild out of here, I can't tell you where to send them. But refugees ain't nothing new. There have been refugees on this planet since these people came out of them caves over in their Caucasus Mountain. There's always been refugees because they come to kill, then destroy. People always ran for their life. There was a bunch of people ain't too long ago came here from somewhere. So don't be taking that as something to feel bad about. You running for your life. Why should you sit here if you can get psychopath, take your life? Get your granddaughter, grandchild, and abuse them. Why should you sit here? What you proving? What you going to prove? We cannot defeat these demons. I know you brothers don't agree with that. This is not our land. It'll be different if we was in Afghanistan, been fighting these psychopaths for over 2,000 years. Why have Afghanistan been able to fight them for over 2,000 years? That's their land. They have a culture.
They have a language. They have abundance to that land. Afghanistan don't send their children to the archipelago to be educated. They got their own religion. They've been fighting them psychopaths for 2,000 years. We do not have that set up here. We was brought here as slaves. This is why they burned our towns, stole all our inventions. Why? The psychopath is not going to let us to compete with him in his country. That don't take no rocket science. He is not going to allow that. If you can't stop him with violence, game over. I don't see us stopping him with violence. We had the Black Panthers, rubbed them out. They rubbed out Dr. King, Malcolm X dead, you name it. Because this is not their land. You think you're going to fight this man and get up on a podium and get in your car and ride off somewhere? It don't go like that. You're going to have to be like Ho Chi Minh and the Taliban over there in Afghanistan. You got to hit and run. You ain't going to fight this man, then walk down the street and get in your car and ride off. That ain't going to happen, brother. It ain't that type of party. This is where we find ourselves. I know people don't want to hear that. I know you don't want to hear that. You want to hear we're great people. We're going to defeat these demons. Look what they doing to us. They put a psychopath in office. First, they put this Uncle Tom in to stir the pot. Then they come with this psychopath and say, hey, look what they're doing to us. They're taking our country. All that stuff is a setup. Most of the people out there listening, you know that's a setup. How you going to challenge that mess? All this old stuff you seeing now, the demonstration, the fight, all that is a setup. They are setting the table for what's finna come down the pipe. They're letting the world know, hey, something is wrong in America. Something is going on here. So when our slaughter starts, they have already created the context. I know this because it's been done over and over. Ain't nothing new. It's the same game. And that is where we are. Now, anybody think you're going to defeat these psychopaths? Go right ahead. You be my guest. But anybody can see that we in a white supremacist country that run it from A to Z, have stopped us in our tracks at every move. If you see that, like me, you should think seriously about getting your hat while the getting is good. If I say one darn life, my job has been done. One life. If one family get out of here, my job has been done.
When I hear your position, I see us sitting around the war table and you giving counsel in relationship to what our next strategic move should be. And then I see this report, if y'all don't mind, where it says, while the United U.S. maintains a vast empire of military installations around the world with huge and hard-to-miss complexes throughout Europe and Asia, bases in Africa have been far better hidden. And if listened only to AFCOM officials, you might even assume that the United States military footprint in Africa will soon be eclipsed by the Chinese or the Russians. Highly classified internal AFCOM files offer a radically different picture. A set of previously secret documents obtained by Tambu Dispatch via the Freedom of Information Act offers clear evidence of remarkable far-ranging and expanded network of outposts strung across the continent. In official plans of operation in 2015, they were drafted and issued the years before. African Command lists 36 U.S. outposts scattered across 24 African countries. These include low-profile locations from Kenya to South Sudan, to a shadowy Libyan Air Force airfield that hadn't previously been mentioned in published reports. Today, according to an AFCOM spokesperson, the number of these sites has actually swelled to 46, including 15 enduring locations. The newly disclosed numbers and reacted documents contradict more than a decade of worth of assembling of U.S. African command and shed new light to a constellation of bases integral to expanding U.S. military operations on the African continent and the Middle East. So when I hear, as you give counsel around this table and we're discussing what we should do, and that is an option that we should seriously consider, I also imagine that there is other counsel at the table who takes the position, as Elliot said, who would take the position maybe when we use the historical metaphor of, not even metaphor, but the historical personages of, say, a Nat Turner or Denmark Vesey and other men and women who said, well, all those things being true, Brother X, then some of us will rap, and looking at the global system of white supremacy, some of us has to prepare ourselves to be prepared to take on this, even if we're going to utilize sticks and stones, because it's our integral manhood and historical reality that we have to do that. Not necessarily our bodily personage or our family members. So I understand what your position, and I see it, you know, that's one that we seriously have to consider. But I recognize that that's one position, a many position, as we sit around this table and discuss what should be our next move. And all of our positions are going to have to be honored, because in the end, there is no other choice but for us to either live as a free people or die as cowards among human in human history. And yes, we were taken. And yes, we were brought into an environment and brought into an environment that really reconditioned us, which made us a new people. And yes, as the sister said from Georgia, a new people has only been operating in its own capacity, at least freedom based off of being, not having the chattel chains on our physical bodies anymore, a relatively short time. So I respect your position. I just recognize that at this table, there's a lot of other positions. And what we have to do in our wise counsel is give, recognize that our end is to for the salvation of our people and our historical memory among people.
My good brother, I appreciate what you said. And, hey, that's what it's all about, to each his own. But that's going to be your choice. Let's be serious. Can we protect millions of black men, women, children, and the elderly when this stuff starts? Do we have the military capability to protect them? Logistics, supply lines, do we have that? No, we do not. My brother, in every military conflict, the civilian deaths outnumber the military death 10 to maybe 15,000 to 1. The reason for that is civilians are easy targets. If you're looking at Afghanistan right now, you keep hearing them kill civilians of Afghanistan at a wedding, at a school, bomb the hospital. They say, we didn't mean it. That was an accident. No, it's not an accident. The reason they are doing that, they are frustrated. They cannot find and kill the enemy up in them mountains who sniping them, planting bombs. So what do? They go after civilians. They did it in Korea. They did it in Vietnam. The same thing going to happen here. Now, let's be clear. Brothers who are ready to fight this enemy, then you go right ahead and do that. But don't sit and tell millions of black men, women, children, elderly who got to have shelter, food, and water. Don't sit here and tell them you're going to be able to provide for them, because you can't. And you got to be on the run. And where is your supply line? Let's be serious here.
Where is your, and what are you fighting for? Let's say they come in to slaughter us. The black boy with the gun, he ready to fight. What is he fighting for? He ain't got
Wait a minute, Brother X. Hold on a second, because we're running out of time. But I just want to say something here. What do you mean, what are you fighting for? If somebody attacks you now in your house, what the hell else would you be fighting for?
You
tell me.
For your safety.
Okay,
you
then. Come
life.
On, man. What are you talking about? What you fighting for? Do me
Let
a favor.
Me answer you.
Wait
Let
a minute,
me
brother. Hold it. Do me a favor.
Okay.
When you, because I know you're a learned man, when you get off the phone, do a little research on the Battle of Milligan's Bend. That's what it's entitled in history. The Battle of Milligan's Bend. It was a number of black soldiers. In, I think it was in Alabama, that they put over their munitions depot. Now, at the time, they wouldn't let black soldiers have any weapons. So these guys didn't have any weapons. The white soldiers that was there abandoned the place because it was surrounded by Confederate soldiers. They figured they would attack the munitions dump, because it was a strategic spot, and they wanted to attack the munitions depot. The white soldiers that was there had abandoned the spot, abandoned it. The white captain that was there didn't know what to do because he didn't have any men with any weapons, and they figured it was easy pickings with black soldiers there with no weapons. All they had was bayonets. So they were outnumbered 3-1. Read it. It's a historical account when they were attacked by Confederate soldiers. And see what our forefathers did with just hand-to-hand combat and some bayonets with guys with weapons. They had bullets in their guns. See what happened at that Battle of Milligan's Bend.
No.
I want you to read it first. Read it first and then come back and comment on it.
Right,
and when you see the spirit of them ancestors touching your spirit, when you read what they did to those white folks and their accounts, that whites, that the captain, because other people that was there, I think the captain was almost mortally wounded. Other people that was there wrote accounts about what blacks, so-called soldiers, because they didn't have any weapons, what they did against these white soldiers that was outnumbered 3-1. Read it. And it'll touch your spirit what our fathers did to those men in hand-to-hand combat.
I'm sure it would, brother, but let me say this.
I want you to read it. I heard your comments. I want you to read it. Then when you come back next week,
to that real quick,
you don't have
to
respond to it because you're not even familiar with what I'm talking about. Get familiar with what I'm talking about.
This will cover it, my good brother. This will cover
No. You don't want to. Listen, you'll cover it when you read it. When you read it, then come back and let's talk.
Okay, well, can I make one last comment?
Milligan's Bend. You ain't even wrote it down, so you ain't going to read it. Hopefully you remember it. Milligan's Bend. Read it.
May I make one last comment?
Go ahead.
Any black people out here in a military a position or whatever, talking about fighting white supremacy when this deal go down, they will be fighting for their safety. They will not be fighting for self-determination and independence. If that was the case, you would be doing it now without armed struggle. That would be all. You have no country to fight for. You're going to be just like Rosewood, Tulsa, Slocum, Texas, Wilmington. You're going to be the same way. And what will victory be? When they attack us and you got some black boys out there, they ready to fight, they all out in the woods, what would victory be? When do you come in? Huh? What would victory be? You ain't got no country.
I'm glad you raised those questions because in my image in my mind, sitting at the table, by you raising those questions, I'm confident, Brother X, there is answers.
Now, oh, certainly there is.
There is no answers. But I'm saying that based off of the people, even up to the point in my personal experience and in our historical experiences, as Brother Elliot's raised, and in the people who have come through time for awakening, and the people that we don't know, when you raise those questions and that representative is sitting at that table, I'm confident that one, if not more, will have a answer. Now, you may not agree with it. You may differ with it.
There you
but
go.
They will have a answer. And there the you question you're asking is, will the, what is the answer?
No, what is victory? If they attack us and you got a few black people out there in the woods shooting and running, what will victory be?
I understand that, but that's what I'm saying. Somebody will have an answer. But yeah, what's most important is that you raise the question for somebody to answer. Because if the question is never raised, we may go on the assumption that there is no answer.
So we don't have an answer when we're not in armed conflict. But we're going to have an answer during armed conflict when millions of black people, men, women, and children, are running for their lives. No supply line, no logistics.
Yeah, well, Brother X, listen here. Listen here. Millions of white folks going to be running for their lives, too. Just keep that in mind.
I doubt that.
Millions of white folks. If millions of black folks, as you say, you're a historian now and you're a soothsayer, if millions of black folks going to be running for their lives, millions of white folks going to be running for theirs.
I doubt that.
Well, read the battle. Listen, hold it. I'm going to let you go. Read the Battle of Milligan's Bend. Read it. Read it. See what your ancestors did. If you're black, and wait a minute, hold up, come on. Listen, I'm gonna cut you off. Yeah, I'm gonna cut you off. Read the Battle of Milligan's Bend. See what your ancestors did. If you're black, read it and see what your ancestors did, and then come back and talk about it.
I know a lot about what our ancestors did.
Read the Battle of Milligan's Bend. Are you familiar with it? Are you
familiar with
it? Get familiar with it. Get familiar with it, and then come back and let's talk about it. Get familiar, and let's talk about it. Because as far as you're concerned, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser was all losers. As far as you're concerned, they was losers. Okay, then. If our people ain't there wasn't no victory.
In a white supremacist country.
All right, well, forget it, man. Let's talk. We'll talk next week. We'll talk next week.
Okay, brother.
Let's grab another call here. 267. 267?
Hey, good afternoon. I mean, good evening, Brother Elliot.
Hey, bro.
Brother Richard. You know, I know victory doesn't come by being a cowardly punk.
Hey,
I don't care how old you are.
Come on, you know
what I mean?
Hey, you run for your life and all that. Come on. You know what? Listen, I respect Brother X, but come on with that. Later.
I'm not going to. I'm going to leave that alone. But, you know, it's just like. I didn't even call for that, but after listening to that garbage, you know what I mean? I get sick of it sometimes. You know, if they come after me, if I take out three of them before they get me, victory is won. You know what I mean? And that's the way you got to look at it. You know, like Malcolm said, every time you fight, what do you fight for? You fight for land. If we don't have nothing, if we don't have the military to fight, we do what we have to do. We just don't put our hands over our eyes and run to the hills just to get shot down. I mean, come on, man. That's just punk. That's punk talk. And it made me mad just sitting there listening to that garbage. But what I had to, I wanted to say something, what Jay said a little earlier, and you might have missed it. But he said something, because first you said, how do we protect our youth? Now, That's a very important question, because if our youth are not listening to us and they're so indoctrinated in BS, Jay brought up something so deep that you might have missed it. He said with these Greek fraternities and all this garbage that these young people are running to, they're running more to that than Pan-Africanism. And, you know, and there you go in a nutshell, man. We have to battle for the minds of our people. I went to a couple of those ceremonies. I think that's a crock of garbage, and I don't care who toes I step on. When you go to these HBCUs and you go through those little initiations and all that garbage and doing all these stupid hand signals and then call yourself a Greek, what's wrong with our people, man? You know what I mean? So, you know, you got some of the most bright, educated people that pledge allegiance to these stupid fraternities and call themselves Greek. They'll call themselves a Greek before they'll call themselves a Pan-Africanist or a nationalist. So, you know, We got a lot of work to do on our hands. Now, how do we protect our youth? I don't have a clue. Because our youth are not even listening. They've been programmed to not even listen to us. And I'll be damned if I stoop to their level, like some people say, oh, you got to come to their level and talk to them and do this. No, I'm not going to stoop to their level. I'm not going to stoop. I can't do it. You know what I mean? So I'm just going to stand firm on what I believe. But you have a lot of work to do on the minds of these people. Now, I do agree with the brother, one thing he said. Because he's talking about we got to get out of this country. We're going to go without a military. You know what I mean? Where we going to go out? Matter of fact, if a lot of us become sovereign-minded and say we're leaving this country, you know this man, he's over there in the motherland right now taking over.
Yeah, that's what Richard was. Yeah, that's what Richard said.
He's over there in the motherland right now raping it. And though some of those countries got military, he's still over there raping it. So, you know, I mean, I believe, and this is my belief. I'm only talking about my belief. I believe we talk too much anyway. Most of us already know the answer, and we're too cowardly to admit it. We see we've been knowing how this country is and how this man has been all our lives. Like I said, I seen the picture of with Trump with these Ku Klux Klan on in this picture, and they were holding arm in arm. I said, that's Trump with some of your Democratic Party representation waiting for your vote. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, but, you know, our people still want to cry over Hillary when some of the Klan was promoting her because they liked her ideology. You know, to what she represented. You know, matter of fact, the Klan loved Obama because he represented a punk black man. So, you know, I mean, oh, man, I just listen to the talk. Sometimes it drives me to the wall, you know, especially that last caller. I understand what the brother's saying because, you know, even with the small percentage of us that know what's going on, that know what we have to do, I mean, it's a small percentage. The overwhelming percentage of our people, man, they're worrying about how to get their next pair of Air Jordans, their next Lexus. And, you know, one sister called in and say that she had a black people talking about black people. See, for one thing, it's no change in an animal. If you've got a mad animal out there that you know is mad and want to kick your ass and he hates you from, there's no change in him. Don't waste no time on him. We just know that's a mad animal. We got to come up with some solutions within ourselves. But then when you have some of us that are just people, a bunch of garbage, you know, it just really frustrates me when I hear this one scholar, I'm not going to call his name, but you know who I'm talking about, Elliot, and Richard might know who I'm talking about too. All he do is come on and say, white supremacy, white supremacy, white supremacy. This man is, you know, and people think that's deep. People think that that's a solution and that's deep. There's nothing deep about that. I think that's the most idiotic, retarded stuff I ever heard in my life. But people think that's deep. Just because a man comes on and says white supremacy, and he's supposed to taught one of our well-known scholars that is deceased now. And I disagree with a lot of stuff she said. So, you know, I mean, and no disrespect to her, but we need to really look at things like it really is. If you got a mad animal out there, that's, we know he's a mad animal. We know how vicious he is. We see it on TV when these policemen are now not only killing our young bulls, they're beating our women right in front of our faces. And the only thing we do is take out cell phones and take videos of them instead of taking something else out and blowing the animal away. So, you know, I'm just talking about things that have to be done and we're not doing them. And you asked the brother the question before the last caller. You said, why aren't we doing this thing? You blamed it on religion. I said, nah, they just love this man too much. And they want to believe that this man loves them. And it's a certain group. It's just only a few of these haters running around here. You know, I mean, this stuff is so sickening. It makes me want to just vomit. You know, listen, man.
Well, wait a minute. You said they love him too much?
They love daddy too much.
Well, wait a minute.
They worship daddy. They got daddy hanging in their churches and everything else.
Love your enemies. Pray for them that despitefully use and persecute you. Love your enemies. That was one of the ones that they drilled into our ancestors when they was beaten and went to lash, that you still supposed to love them.
And that's why I don't waste my time on the mad animal. The mad animal's going to be a mad animal. He's been a mad animal. There's no changing him. But it's time to wake up our people. It's not attacking our people. Just wake the hell up and know what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
There was a movie that just came out, and I'm going to leave you with this. There was a movie that just came out, Planet of the Apes, the last one. You had a white neo-Nazi run government that enslaved the apes. They hated the apes, but also they hated other people like them that had a virus from the apes. You had another faction of white folks that were coming from the north. They said, we know how to treat the virus from the apes. So we're not into killing one another. We know how to treat it, and we know how to protect ourselves against this virus. But the thing about it, those two factions hated each other, and they wanted to fight against one another. I said, there you go. Republicans and the Democrats. And then they had one thing in common. They hated the apes.
Apes, right.
They hated they hated each other, and they were going to clash each other. But when they saw the apes, they started shooting at the apes.
They did clash with each other. And after the one, the neo-Nazi, as you characterize it, laws blew up. And they seen the apes, they turned around until the natural event occurred.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they as you said, they did both. It was, even though they had a virus to protect themselves, there still was, they both hated the apes.
They both hated the apes. And did you see the one ape that wore the blue vest like Del Rota McKenzie?
Right.
Did you see that?
Right, so they
had a Black Lives Matter ape with the ape. Come on, brother. Man.
Y'all killing me.
Hey, Richard, am I lying though, Richard?
No, you're not lying.
Okay. All right, so if you didn't learn from that movie, were they telling you what they think about you in that movie, then, you know, it ain't no helping you. I mean, they're telling you, you're like, we're going to fight against one another because we have different beliefs. The North against the South, the liberal against the conservative, the Democrat against the... We're going to fight against each other. But our common enemy is the ape. So I'm going to leave you all with that, man. But, man, got a lot of work to do, bro. But anyway, what do you think about that fraternity thing, though? Calling myself a Greek.
Oh, no, listen, I agree with what you said, and I agree with what Jay said. No, a lot of people are really locked into that.
Yeah. And proud of it. So, and dual and single, I think it's stupid. So, you know, I just gotta just get back in my little zone, start minding my business, and not allow my blood pressure to go up. I just had to give you a call. And, but I know one thing, we can never attain victory by being a punk. And I'm going to say that one more time. So I don't have to read that book you're talking about. I just know it ain't no victory in being a coward. So, all right, man, I'll talk to you guys. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for the call, man.
All right, now.
Richard, we done went overtime. We got a couple more. You want to take
it? Up too. I'm like, okay.
You want to take it or what?
Go for it.
All right, let's go to Oh, boy. Wait a minute. Hold it. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Sean from New Jersey.
This is Sean?
Yeah.
How you feel, brother?
Well, I'm all right. By the end of the conversation, I probably feel some way because none of Black Talk except Warren Ballantyne want to listen to different opinions. So I have to see how the conversation go. But Ralph talked about two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about the guy in Greece and what Ralph just said about the scholar. Then the scholar he criticized, when y'all first came on here, I criticized the same scholar, and it wasn't accepted. I was ran off the phone because we do have to look at some of these so-called elders and say, what blueprint have they laid out? Where is the victories? But we don't look at people in wins and losses. We look if they got a good mouth game. And that's why the young people don't follow these old heads. Because they go, where's the victory?
Wait a minute. You said when you first came on, what are you talking about? I didn't. When you first came on, you mentioned what?
Well, the last guy was Ralph, right?
Yeah, but you said when you first came on.
He talked about the scholar just saying white supremacy,
oh, yeah.
White
mm-hmm.
supremacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said when y'all came on about 4 years ago this October, right? On a Black radio network.
Okay.
I had the same criticism for the same scholars. And all I'm saying is it wasn't accepted. That's all I'm saying. I'm just reinforcing. I'm disagreeing with what Ralph just said.
Okay.
But it wasn't accepted then to have criticism for these scholars. I guess because I don't have a DR in front of my name. Well, all I say is some of these young people don't listen because we need to see victory. I'm not calling myself young, but the young people I talk to, you need to see where's the hospitals? You know, where's the urgent clinics? Where's the schools? I gave money to Dr. Umar so he could build a school for Black boys. I ain't worrying about it if he build it or not because I gave because Black men need leaders.
And then
there's those victories in the old head. The baby boomers have.
When they ask that question, and I think that you just gave for me what resonates with me, and that we don't amplify enough. But when you answered that question, when you projected that you gave to this institution being built that isn't built yet, and that you don't care. At this point, that whether it's going to be built now or later, when you give that as a response, then to me, to that young person, this is the example of what they have to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless people do that, unless we do that as an individual level, we will not be able to see that happening as a group level. And so, you know, but when a person asks you that, it isn't an answer that can't be answered because you are a living example that this is what I do. And therefore, this is what you do. And if you do it and I do it and others do it, we'll see these examples. But if you just asking me, where is the examples? And you're not contributing so that example can be brought into being, then no, we won't see it, and you won't see it, and you'll be asking me tomorrow.
What I find a lot of the old heads, though, is if you don't join their organization, then they basically tell you can't criticize them. And that's crazy to me. A lot of these, 99% of these organizations I wouldn't want to join, and they probably wouldn't want me to join because I don't think that it's going anywhere.
But the ones you do see is going anywhere, whether you join or not, if you contribute, that's,
if you support them,
that's the part that I think that we, because that seems invisible.
Yeah, but I only want to support people who's on the same, doing my same mindset.
Dr. Umar is one of them.
And I can't find too many more that's on the same mindset as me. That's my point.
Can you find one?
No. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Wait a minute. Let me make sure I'm clear what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying that there is no other person like with a mindset like yours who is doing physical work, actual work. So at this point, let's say, I don't know what the number is. It's 30 million Africans in America. And I don't know what the organizational numbers is. We're saying, and you're saying, sitting at this table of council, that as of right now, there is no organization that you would give that is doing the work that you represent.
Well,
can I give a contribution to?
Can I give you the three people I've gave money to? I've been wait
a minute now, because if you give me three, you do have three that you said.
Two of the three don't have my mindset. I gave to a brother, just slipped my mind, was just from Harlem. He throws something at the Cotton Club every now and then, the lawyer.
Okay.
Automatics.
Yeah, Brother Automatics. That's because I'm known, because I grew up in New York, so I've known about Brother Alton for literally 30 years, and I know the work and sacrifice. That's why I give to him.
We don't have the same mindset, but I saw his work. But he has enough. What I only point, and I understand, hopefully I understand the left and breadth of what you're saying. I just need to, because what I hear us, when we go into this absolute nothingness, it makes it, it goes against the grain of our historical reality.
Brother, if you've heard me on these radio stations, you know I have a hatred for white folks, and I have a hatred for black people.
And there's others like you.
Others
like you.
Yeah, but when I talk about what I've done in the street, these places that I talk to don't want to hear what I've done, which is fine. I keep it to myself. But again, I've given to Brother Automatics because I don't have a lot. I've had other people donate to Brother Umar, not just me. I've made other people donate. And I've given to Warren Ballantyne when Warren Ballantyne got in trouble, legal trouble, because I thought it was wrong what they was doing to him. Other than that, I don't give to anyone else because they don't have similar mindset.
Right, but the question we have to look at, and that young person is looking at, when you talk to them, is who you gave to. And then when you explain, just as you're explaining to us, And to us, meaning all of us who are in this listening audience right now around the country and around the world, then you are saying, whether you agree to 100% with their mindset or not, these are the parameters that you have defined as people that we should at least consider with the meager resources that we have, that we should consider to support. I'm just trying to see, let you know, that we acknowledge that your contribution to perpetuating those others is doing something. And more importantly, to the point that you made, as far as I heard, what you can say and what we have to say to young people who come to us. Because if we saying nobody, then yes, I can see them being despondent and not doing anything.
But if you just say free, then
they could say, well, oh, now the conversation going, why do you get those three?
I explain why I gave those three, but I also, there was another anti-immigrant guy that called the show down in D.C. that come on 4 to 7. I called him and spoke. We spoke 20, 30 minutes, had a great conversation. I told him I wouldn't join his operation, but I'll send him some bread because I'm anti-immigrant. That's just me because I grew up around them situations. I know how they treat me. I know how they treat blacks that are descendants of the slave. That's part of the reason why, again, I won't join any of these black organizations, because somehow I've been shifted my thought from as global this global thing to taking care of minds here around me first, and then taking care of brothers outside of those around me first. You know what the brother told me? He said, I'd rather you keep your money but join my organization. I told him, I can't join your organization because I'm right here on a 100 point meter. I'm at 90. And when it gets to 100 and I do something and violate somebody where I can't come back from it, it's going to destroy your organization. So I told him, it's all nice, bro, that you invited me in, but I'd rather send you a couple of dollars and join your organization, because I wouldn't want what you're trying to do for black people here in America. I wouldn't want that disrupted because of some foolishness I done got into, because I done had it up to here. Now, what I want to understand is, how are y'all going to protect young people? Nobody explains that, because, again, you don't have any hospitals. You don't have any people out here training on a major level, training in
and guns. You don't train on man-to-man combat. There's no growing food program other than the NOI-MOA, which is a Nation of Islam agriculture part of their thing. And so when the brother called from Chicago and talked like he do, in one sense, I hear about the people saying that's gutless talk. But I don't see their paperwork where they did anything outside of talk either. So what the brother is saying is y'all built for this to go in that direction? But then I look, and I don't see anybody who's caused any harm to these white folks, including these baby boomers, who's been just sucking up all the resources that done sucked up all the things that my grandparents did in this country. And that's the only thing they could do is become doctors and professors and you know, their commodity is speech and books and taking people on tours. All these guys is frauds, but nobody don't call them out because y'all got this little circle of friends and family and people y'all like instead of what's good for the whole community. Sometimes you disagree. Neither one of you disagree with your moms or pops or cousin or sister or brother. How you can't disagree with the so-called conscious brothers? That's the part I don't understand. Your father, you could disagree, but you can't disagree with this brother because he's taking trips to Africa or because he don't wrote this corny, this weak book that's not telling us how to either participate in a capitalist country or get out of it and do communism or socialism. They don't tell you either one of the three or even fascism. They don't tell you nothing. All he's doing is peddling talk. And it's station to station to station to station. That's all they do. And then they wonder why the young people, I don't consider myself young. I'm talking about the cats under me, the 35 and younger. And then you wonder why they don't follow you. You wonder why they integrationists and assimilationists and pluralism they take part of. Because the elders ain't there. Well, been there.
John, let me mention something to you. Because on the program about 3 or 4 months ago, and I kind of pride myself and Brother Richard of having people on this program that are doing things for our people, not just talking, but doing things. About 4 months ago, we had Michael Smith on, who started the African American Gun Association. Seemed like they got the NRA, started the African American Gun Association. Remember when he was talking, Richard? All of a sudden it's about 30 chapters around the country in different states where they're teaching young people, old people, whatever, how to safely use guns and be proficient at it.
Todd Johnson, was he part of that group?
Say that again?
Whatever gun club he was part of, they disowned him when he did what he did.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Makai Johnson, was he part of that? The brother down there in Dallas.
I don't know whether he was part of it, but let me finish.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Because he was part of a gun club, too.
Okay.
All right.
I asked him, what does it take to start a chapter? And he said, well, you know, it's growing all the time. But he said, if you got two or three men, what did he say, Richard, three?
Yeah.
I think he said three people can start a chapter. Now, that's an organization you can join.
No, it can't, because I'm a felon. Okay. So what did I say? Because I actually been out here hand-to-hand.
Well,
combat.
Put it this
I'm
way.
I actually got paperwork to show what do I do.
Encourage
That's what
some
I'm saying.
Sean, listen to me, man. Encourage some younger people to join and learn how to safely use weapons. Not like they do in the movies where the gun is turned to the side and all types of old junk gun.
Oh,
people find
stuff. Don't
people find guns in the
community.
People find guns in the
stuff.
People find no, it ain't made up. People find guns in the community.
I never saw nobody do it.
You let me
never.
Finish, man. People find guns in the community, hitting children, old people, and everything else. These guys don't know how to. Half of them don't know how to piss straight. Let alone fire some guns.
Respectively, you switching the conversation back to the young people instead of going with white people the elders that sell us.
Wait a minute.
I'm talking about an organization that can be joined. If you can't join an organization because you're a felon, then join it. Start one on your own.
I don't want to scam my people. I'm good.
Come on, man.
It's not about you doing. It's about you informing others. The thing is that, you know, I apologize, Elliot, but it's just Brother Sean, it raises, as Brother X and others, raised really, you know, and y'all keep hearing me say, I'm sitting at, in this forum, we're sitting at the table strategizing. Therefore, and all voices have equal position. Not that they're going to win in relationship to what's going to be our next tactical move, but we have to, just like the quote-unquote U.S. government got the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they all sit around at the table, all the departments, and they present their position, their research of what they think should be the next move, you know, and they have to come out of there with a either unified plan or a plan. Well, I'm listening, you know, and I recognize that that's a position, but you can't say, well, what I do, if our position now is what we're building is other people being informed. That's why Time for Awakening is here, of what they can do. And if young people aren't saying, I don't see anything, and we're saying, well, here are some things, and Brother Sean is saying, these are the things that I see. I don't agree with them, but these are the things that I see that need to be told to young people, then that's, we might differ, but we can't disagree with the facts. When you say, well, I contribute to this, even though I don't agree, I contribute to that, because that's something being told to young people. And that, to me, is the powerful and important point. One, that we're at the table. And two, that we're all going to not disagree. And three, that we have the right to not agree with each other. But we are under the urgency to come out with something that we all agree that, in our difference, that we're going to deal with, even if it's going to be diversity.
We got to penalize the scammers within the community. And a lot of them, I hear on these radio shows. I hear on these radio shows with these popular radio hosts and on TV that I know, because I go do background checks on everybody that come that I listen to. And a lot of these cats are scammers, but nobody don't want to say that. Cause...
Hello?
That's another part.
Hello? Hello?
Are you there?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You must have cut yourself. What did you say again?
No, I said part of it is got to start with getting rid of the scammers.
Oh, well, that's
the organization.
I agree with that.
And stop letting them get light on TV and on the air. Cut it out. A lot of young people know a lot of these cats are scammers. They want to sell a book. They want to sell a convention.
Well, you ain't got no problem here.
To Africa, a trip to Mexico to look for black people. We know black people all around this planet. How is that helping me here, though? And nobody seems to get that. How is that helping me and mine?
Hey, brother,
a lot of scammers.
Sean, listen. You know, shoot.
Have a good. I'm out of here. I got to roll anyway.
All right, man. Listen,
have a good day.
Don't be a stranger, man. Call more than once every 4 months. Yeah, I think we lost him. Let's go to, we got 3 minutes, Richard, because it's coming up on 10 o'clock. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, brother Elliot, brother Richard. This is brother Marcus.
Hey, Marcus.
From Memphis. Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey had a plan, see what I'm saying? And that's the plan we need to go to, see what I'm saying? Because every other ethnic group took Marcus Garvey's plan and ran with that plan and gained freedom, see what I'm saying? So Garvey had a plan, you know? And in fact, in spite of what you think, today I was watching on YouTube all day long, there was a magnificent program coming out of Jamaica celebrate Marcus Garvey's birthday. So you mean I see nothing happening here, but the world is moving outside of here. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
You know? And I agree with the brother. I said, at some point, we're going to have to fight this man. But we got to prepare before we do that. You know, we can't commit suicide now. We're not at that stage yet. So we got to prepare. Organization is everything. See, and we got to make that link to the motherland, tie that economical, umbilical cord. And even though they over in Africa, the European over in Africa, we still outnumber the white man over there. See, so that's where the large mass majority of our people are, is in Africa. Africa is the prize. It ain't damn America. This is the red man land. So I'm saying we got to, if we're saying, you know what, we're going to turn our back on Africa and stay here with the white man to fight, with, you know, the white man for the red man land. No, something is wrong with us. It is Africa is the prize. And it's the man, Marcus Garvey. He had a plan, and that's the plan we should go dig up and revitalize. Anyway, you take care, brother.
Brother Marcus, thank you for your call, sir. Richard,
yes.
Lively discussion, man. You know, I always like to have the open forum with the guests, with the callers as the guests. I just like to exchange.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Something
I
always comes
it,
out of it. Something always comes out of it.
I agree, and I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. And, definitely this is the training ground, and hopefully I'm not beating a drum out of beat, but this is the training ground when you make a point about a think tank, when you have dialogue, discussion, different points of view, but everybody recognized that the goal is the same. We may not even define the vision the same, but the goal is the same in wanting to help, African people be one, protected, and, being able to thrive in a hostile environment or in an environment that is our natural habitat. All of us sound like that's what we want, and we're just describing and have to make decisions based off of the circumstances, the immediate ones, whatever. And we're using these examples of current events to help us sharpen that thought, which will become policy, which will affect all of us, but training ground for making decisions.
Yeah, you're right. We need more. We need more input from, a lot of other age demographics of our callers. That's why I thank Thomas that called out of New York, and Kia, and my good brother out of Colorado Springs, and Sean. Mm-hmm. We need the input from these men and women. We need it. We need it. It's a part of what we got to do. And it's a part of operational unity. We're not clones, mm-hmm. Richard. We don't agree. Listen, and I think Sean made a reference to it. I don't agree with everything my mother and father, God rest their soul, they're gone. I didn't agree with everything they told me, but I loved them. They were part of me. My wife, I don't agree with everything she says. But, this is what it is. We got to develop an operational unity among ourselves. We're not going to agree with everything each one of us says, but we can agree to do an approach, just like you mentioned about, and you used the example of these other people. When they go in their what they consider their hallowed halls, they got to come out of there with some type of agreement, the approach they're going to use. They might fight it out or whatever, but they still come out of there with an approach that they're going to use. Mm-hmm. And we can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And we have done it.
Yes. Exactly. We've done it long before them. Mm-hmm. They learned it from us. I want to thank everybody for participating in the discussion this evening. Lively discussion with the listening audience, also, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon,